Shaggy Nick, when you eliminate the impossible, whatever you are left with, however improbable, must be the truth. Sometimes, I suppose, the laws of libel and perhaps even defamation prevent you from following that instruction of Sherlock Holmes's, I think, right through to its most obvious conclusion. But having campaigned on a promise to release Epstein's client list, Donald Trump remains apparently desperate to keep the full dossier of documents from Epstein's estate secret. Trump derangement syndrome is a phrase you may have heard, currently deployed to describe people who really want to know about the depth of the most powerful man in the world's association with a notorious paedophile. What's going on here?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the UK economy grew very slightly in the third quarter, but not by as much as experts thought. New GDP figures out this morning show a 0.1% increase between July and September. Shadow Chancellor Sir Mel Stride has told LBC it's leading to widespread uncertainty.
Well, it's below expectations, and the expectations were not that great. So we've seen a slowdown in growth over the last quarter. And in fact, in September, the economy actually contracted. And I'm afraid that's because of the choices that this government has taken. It's whacked taxes on businesses and, of course, borrowed and spent vast amounts of money, which has stoked inflation and kept interest rates higher than they would otherwise have been. And we're now going into this budget with great uncertainty.
Senior Republicans are calling for the full release of documents relating to sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Thousands of files were published yesterday showing claims Donald Trump once spent hours with a victim. The US president denies any wrongdoing in relation to Epstein. Ed Miliband has told LBC he has no interest in taking Sir Keir Starmer's job. The Energy Secretary says he fully supports the Prime Minister and encouraged his colleagues to do the same. There were anonymous accusations suggesting members of the Cabinet might be planning a leadership challenge. New figures show cases of online grooming across England and Wales have reached a record high. The number has almost doubled in the past 7 years. LBC's Fraser Knight has the details.
Very young children affected by this, the internet being described as an open door into their bedroom. The figures being described this morning as deeply alarming by the NSPCC Children's Charity. And it says figures that they've gathered from police show there were 7,263 cases of online child grooming recorded last year.
And a list of musicians have written a statement urging the government to cap ticket resale prices. Radiohead and Coldplay, and along with other artists, say ministers must tackle ticket touts who are preventing genuine fans from accessing music events. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 26 points at 98.85. The pound buys $1.31 and Euro 13. LBC weather, showers in southern Scotland and northern England, a mix of sunshine and cloud elsewhere, with highs of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
In 2024, a hangry fan posted, "Why do other countries have better McDonald's menus than ours?" So, we went abroad and heisted some worldwide favourites. The World Menu Heist. 8 of the most wanted McDonald's menu items from around the world. Now in the UK. Until 25th of November from 11 a.m, please apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after 10, and it's another one of those days, isn't it, where you are probably trying to put together a jigsaw that somebody has tidied up and accidentally put pieces from 3 or 4 different jigsaws all in the same box. That is, good Lord, where did that come from? That is the first time I've ever actually pinned down what it's like to try to keep track of Donald Trump's presidency, or even perhaps Donald Trump's life. It's as if sort of someone has accidentally jumbled up 4 different jigsaws in the same box, and you're trying to do that jigsaw. Every now and then you find a corner. And then you find 7 more, which is really confusing. Or you find 2 bits that clearly do go together, maybe even 4 bits. but then nothing. So you've got, oh Lord, where does this go? There's no sky. Hey, so that's what it's like some mornings. Some days, of course, we can call upon Simon Marks to have a look down the back of the sofa and find pieces that we'd missed or that we didn't know we needed or that we didn't even realise existed. But of course, when he brings them to the table, all he does sometimes is create even more confusion and mystery about what precisely we're trying to pin down. What is the actual picture that we are trying to put together? And I don't know that there ever will be one. I really don't. I think it's like trying to nail jelly to the wall or indeed herd cats. And that perhaps is the point, is that you put so much obfuscation, litigation, intimidation, you put so much in the space that the idea of there being a simple thread of comprehension becomes absolutely ridiculous, absolutely impossible. And the temptation then, for those of us who are charged with trying to keep track of some of this stuff, the temptation then is to just give up, to throw your hands up in the air and go, oh, forget about it. That is, I think, what the plan is when somebody like Steve Bannon, the convicted criminal who remains a confidant of Donald Trump and has been pardoned by Donald Trump for some, if not all, of his crimes. Again, it's impossible to keep track. There's another bit of a different jigsaw. When he talks about flooding the zone with bleep, that's what they're doing. If you flood the zone with bleep, you can tell we haven't got BBC budgets, can't you? Then I have to do that myself. I just gave the game away. But if you are flooding the zone with bleep, then you are making it almost impossible for people who want to actually keep track of things or who want to try to keep track of things. And then you've got the other thing that is clearly going on, and this has become clear this week in a heap of ways. The only thing I didn't really credit was how complicit UK media individuals and institutions would be in Donald Trump's determination to create a media ecosystem in the White House where nobody will ask him questions about Jeffrey Epstein. Just pause and think about that just for a moment, because I think it's really important. Again, it's really easy to be distracted by pieces from a different jigsaw. But why on earth is Donald Trump bigging up the half-wits at GBBs, of all things? Answer, because he wants, even with foreign journalists, as Simon Marks again warned us months ago, he wants the press corps at the White House, he wants the journalists who have access to the president to be people and institutions who are too frightened, too bent, or too supine to actually ask him questions he doesn't want to be asked. I joked with you, probably in February or March of this year, that we would end up with a press corps that essentially says on every day a variation on the question that they'll take it in turns to ask of how, on a scale of 1 to 10, how wonderful are you, Mr. President? And that was a joke in February or March of this year. I don't think it's very funny now. I don't even think it's necessarily a joke now. That is the direction of traffic that we have seen the United States media forced to go in. And this week we've seen the UK media as well co-opted into that with the connivance, oddly, of the Daily Telegraph and various other sort of right-wing lobbyists who somehow ended up with jobs advising the BBC on independence. So that is partly why the story that broke overnight does not feel as guaranteed to bring down a president as it would in almost any other circumstances. It is yet another mark of how far we have fallen and how mad things have become. The simple notion that the old rules no longer apply. And this hasn't happened by accident, has it? This isn't something that we've suddenly woken up and gone, oh, whoops-a-daisy. We seem to have abandoned all semblance of transparency, integrity, ethics, and evidence, and ended up in a place where the man who invented fake news can be pursuing a vendetta against, for example, the BBC. But that's not what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about this curious combination of conditions whereby Donald Trump can campaign on a promise to release the Epstein files. And then, having become president, can be diametrically and violently opposed to the release of the Epstein files. And it doesn't actually make sense at first glance, does it? Because if he had anything to hide, Why would, again, are we doing that thing? Are we making a different jigsaw? Applying logic? Thinking just because he did something on Monday means that that necessarily entails that he would have to do something on Wednesday? What would it be? I don't know, but here we are. When he was campaigning, even as recently as September of last year, he said he would have no problem releasing more files related to the convicted sex trafficker and paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Asked why a so-called list of clients who had visited Epstein's private island had not yet been made public, Trump said it probably will be. I don't know whether that list exists. I'm not sure it does, but we do know that there are thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of documents that do exist. The email exchanges, essentially, between Epstein and a whole heap of people who perhaps might once have been somewhat optimistically described as the great and the good. He describes Trump in terms. He talks about Trump having spent hours in his house with one of his victims. He talks about the, Epstein talks about Trump being one of the, no, the most disgusting man that he has ever met. I mean, again, you sort of find yourself wondering why he would bother lying about this stuff long before he found himself in legal jeopardy. And of course, after he found himself in legal jeopardy, why would you lie about things that would be easily disproved if they ever came to court? You know that the trafficking of girls and young women saw him convicted. It wasn't enough, of course, to see people like Andrew Windsor and Peter Mandelson cut off, and Sarah Ferguson cut off all contact with him, but eventually his crimes caught up with him and he went to jail. And for some reason, the Republican, we probably need a bit of help anatomizing this. The Republican machine, or the MAGA machine, because they, I think, still remain largely different things. The MAGA machine got very, very excited about this. Even the QAnon conspiracy and hoaxers were talking about VIP paedophile rings. I mean, in their case, they emanated from the cellar of a building in New York that doesn't have a cellar, didn't it? But the way in which the story has split Trump's base right down the middle absolutely fascinates me. On what possible grounds could you not want these files to be released? If not, a terror of what is in them. You can see why they've worked so hard to get the phrase Trump derangement syndrome into common parlance. Now, I don't know if everybody who's used the phrase Trump derangement syndrome with a straight face is actually as desperate to keep these files secret as Donald Trump appears to be. Or perhaps they shill for or work for people who are as desperate to keep these files secret as Donald Trump seems to be, or whether people who use the phrase Trump derangement syndrome with a straight face are just too sort of lazy and careless to actually think about why some of us are so concerned about the nature of the man who has his finger over the nuclear button, or the nature of the man who has the economic health of our planet in many ways in the palm of his hand, or the nature of a man who was clearly very good friends with a sex trafficker and paedophile. You get that phrase, Trump derangement syndrome, into public discourse, and you are helping the man who is desperate for his friendship and the depth of his association with Jeffrey Epstein to be kept secret, keep it secret. I don't know that everybody who uses the phrase can be accused of complicity in any cover-up, but it is either that, it's either complicity in a cover-up, or it's a level of careless ignorance so extraordinary that you wonder how they can sleep straight in bed at night. Weirdly, they're the same people that told you to vote for Brexit, that Liz Truss was a genius, that Boris Johnson was a stand-up guy who you could trust with your life savings, that austerity, yada, 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 we could go on. So exactly the same people who use the phrase Trump derangement syndrome, who also sold you pup after pup after pup after pup after pup, in the context of British politics, in the context of domestic politics. I'm going to tell you something. I hope it doesn't make me sound like a bigger plum than usual, but it's one of those subjects where you may know more about the detail, the family tree, if you like, of this story than I do. I've followed it a little bit more closely than the average bear, but I haven't followed it completely closely because I didn't quite understand where it was going to lead, or where it was going to... It was in Washington, not New York, the pizza place. Forgive me for that. I've done that a few times now. I've got one of those mental blocks on it. I say in my head it's in Washington, and then my mental block goes, no, it's New York. So I say New York out loud while thinking, no, I bet it's Washington. And then you text me to say it was Washington. Of course it was Washington. It's the seat of the US government, the seat of the US political establishment. So I've got two questions for you. The first is, why hasn't this story gone away? 03456060973. And the second is, why, and this is a weird question to ask you, and obviously we have to be a little bit careful. It's why I'm not going to ask you the question, why is Trump so desperate to keep it secret? But I want you to think about this. Why did he campaign on a promise to release something that he's now so desperate to keep secret? That is, I think, one of those examples of us getting about 30 pieces of the same jigsaw assembled before we accidentally pick up a piece that someone's put back in the wrong box and we can't place it on the board for love nor money. But why did he campaign on a promise to do something that he is now desperate not to do? And, I mean, I'll try if I can to bring you some of the most alarming elements of these emails. I mean, the detail is extraordinary. And as I've said to you a few times, I think, although you lose track of certainty, don't you, at times like this, when you're trying to do one jigsaw with the contents of five different boxes, you lose track of certainty, even sometimes of objectivity. Is it right to say that any other president would have been absolutely banjaxed by these kinds of revelations? With Trump, there's a sense of, oh, here we go again. Here we go again. So why did he campaign on a promise to do something that the moment he got into power, he became desperate not to do? And that speaks to both the MAGA machine, it speaks to the American political establishment, it speaks to the relationship between power and media that was once, of course, charged with speaking truth to power. And listen, I don't know that it's possible to hold a position that's sympathetic to Trump at this moment. But if it is, I'd love to hear it. Like, there is actually an answer to this question that doesn't lead us to the most obvious and unpleasant conclusion. A conclusion that's very easy to arrive at if you've seen footage of Trump and Epstein sort of leering together at a room full of young women. Or you remember the comments Trump has made about beauty pageants and access to dressing rooms and things like that. But obviously we can't go there. But the question of why did he camp? Because he didn't have to. Or maybe he did. That's what I mean by the possibility of you having followed things more closely than I did. What do you think explains the decision to campaign on a promise to do something that became politically toxic for him the moment he got into power, so much so that he is, I mean, he remains, he's, the lies follow the lies follow the lies. Extraordinary to think that the BBC is preparing to apologise to a man who has only ever told the truth by accident. It's extraordinary, isn't it? But that's where we are now. But the well-worn playbook of how he hopes to kick this into the long grass, it's a Democrat conspiracy, even though Republicans are queuing up to vote for the release of the documents. It's a hoax. We've literally jailed the man. And we've got photographs of you leering with him at young women. We've got photographs of you, your wife, him, and his girlfriend. It's all a hoax. It's extraordinary. You signed his birthday card and then, of course, claimed that you hadn't. So that naive belief you have, that naive belief that you're taught by your parents as a child, that the truth really matters, it's never felt more imperiled, has it, on a global scale. And remember, I mean, I presume if you're sending me a message, as one person has, saying, why are you talking about this? It's not even happening in Britain. I presume that you're either a massive Trump fan who is finally suffering from a dose of caveat emptor, or you've forgotten the influence and the impact that the President of the United States has upon our country at any time, up to and including threatening to sue the BBC for £1 billion. It's not even Idiot's Corner, that kind of contribution to the programme. It's a call for matron or summon the nurse kind of territory. But you get all of that
all of that noise, all of that distraction into the space where once we'd have been a little bit clear-eyed and focused on this extraordinary question of why you campaign on a promise to do something within your power, and then the moment you achieve that power, you become passionately opposed to doing the thing that you promised to do. Listen, if that's not the thing you find most interesting about what broke yesterday and the ripples that emanate from it, the rock that was thrown into the pool, then, you know, give me a ring and talk me through your perspectives as well. But that is where I am at the moment. That's the thing I find most intriguing. Why? Why did he feel he had to campaign on a promise to release this stuff and then pivot almost immediately to lying about it being a hoax or claiming that he barely knew the man? And, of course, refusing and resisting violently and furiously all attempts to get these documents released. Shall I remind you of the phone number? And, of course, the reason I remind you of a phone number is so that you can join the extraordinary number of people already this week who have made their first call to the radio station. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. Everything's gone mad. And the minute you stop trying to make sense of the madness is the minute you might as well hang up your headphones and go home.
LBC.
It's easy to forget just how crazy things have been over the past couple of years. Every day we wake up to something new. Tariffs and taxes on anything and everything. It's tempting to put your hands in your ears and go, la 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 la, I can't hear you, until it's all over. But you know what's the best response to crazy times? A plan for your money. And Quilter can help. Because let's face it, there's probably going to be some crazy times ahead too. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
And I guess the question I don't really want to ask, because I'm frightened of your answer, is he going to just walk away from this as well? Is he going to wash this off like so much shower gel as well? While people who are apparently blind to the horrors of what they've ushered in just shout Trump derangement syndrome from the sidelines. It's extraordinary. And there's one thing I'd like you to focus on as we move forward from this programme. I mean, looking at the picture from a few feet away. Tell me I'm wrong when I tell you he's trying to create a media ecosystem in the White House and beyond where nobody who's likely to ask him a discomforting question is allowed to get anywhere near him. I said to you earlier in the week, and it hasn't happened yet, but I would not be surprised if the BBC lose access to the press briefings at the White House and get replaced by GBBs. I really don't. I really wouldn't be surprised, because that's what he wants. He wants to create an environment in which nobody has got the guts or the instincts or the desire to ask him uncomfortable questions. 23 minutes after 10, Neil is in Cowbridge. Neil, what would you like to say?
I remember really clearly the interview that he had with an American journalist before the election. Yeah. And he was asked directly, because it was current at the time as well, if you're elected, will you release the Epstein files? And he paused suspiciously for about half a second. It was just long enough to be noticeable, and then quickly answered yes. And the truth is, I think he was trapped, and he probably thought to himself, I'll just change my mind later. I mean, I can say it today and change it tomorrow. It won't matter. But
because he couldn't say no.
he couldn't say no, 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 because it was already clear that it was important to the MAGA base.
Remind us why it was important. All right, you don't have to. Someone else can if that's not your sort of purview. But the I mean, he was. You're probably right, actually. Good Lord, that's embarrassing, Neil. Is that you remember what goes on this program better than I do?
Well, I know you were wondering. I doubt that, Jane. You remember yesterday when? but I mean, you know, I think you talked about it yesterday, didn't you? About Trump and how he sort of, you know, he can sort of get away with, you know, sort of saying anything he wants, really. But that time he was trapped. It was a really tricky one, and it's come back to bite him. Why it matters so much to his base, I don't know. And perhaps again, I think this is what you touched on yesterday. There's the sort of deeply religious element of the MAGA base, and you know, there is a morality.
That's probably a question for a different day, actually, because they're, I mean, to be fair, the ones who describe themselves as deeply religious are the ones that are happiest seeing people, human beings, fellow creations of our Lord God and children of Jesus Christ, being rounded up and treated like cattle by ICE, and quite often their own pastors turn out to be sexually deviant as well without suffering any major career consequences. And of course, while they're passionately opposed to abortion, they couldn't give a hoot about children who've actually been born. So I get that, but there's a bit of a blind spot on that theory. I guess, as with a lot of conspiracy theories, if it turned out to have a nugget of truth in it, it amplifies the issue for the subscribers. So if you were buying into the QAnon nonsense, and then Epstein came along and it looked like a cabal of very rich and powerful men were trafficking and abusing young women, which is true, then it kind of proves that you're right about lots of things. And Trump was happy to ride that horse. This is the point Neil makes quite well. Whether he was boxed into hopping onto the horse or whether he hopped onto it of his own free will, he wanted to get off it as soon as he possibly could, not least after getting into the White House. Thank you, mate. Anna is in Oxford. Anna, what do you think?
Oh, hi, James. I've got a couple of answers, really. So the first one is, why did he campaign on it when he knew that he was likely going to be implicated? There was an experiment, not the Milgram experiment, a different experiment involving electric shocks. And this experiment had some psychopaths and some control people who weren't psychopaths. And they were all told they were going to get an electric shock in 5 minutes or whatever. The psychopaths, their heart rate remained completely steady, whilst the non-psychopaths, their heart rate went up because they were anxious about it. And this sort of reflects that if you're a psychopath, they don't worry so much about I used to be a psychiatric nurse, so I do know a bit about it professionally, but that they don't feel the sense of anxiety that we do about the consequences of their actions. So a bit like a sort of toddler with a sort of instant gratification disorder, they do something, they get something from that, and then what happens next week is just inconsequential to them at that time.
Were you listening yesterday?
A bit.
Did you hear, I forget who it was, I think he was in Manchester, introduce the word cartilaginous into our collective vocabulary?
Yes, I did. Yes,
you're describing a cartilaginous approach, aren't you? I think it means sort of gristly and shark-like, and the idea that you just keep pushing forward and you never worry about what happened 10 seconds ago.
Yeah. And so I believe, obviously, I mean, I don't know how anyone could not think he was a psychopath, but that's kind of why he...
Or at least a sociopath, because conscience is clearly something that doesn't trouble him. I remember him being asked about the murder of Charlie Kirk and pointing at the building work that was being done on the other side of the lawn. It was frankly extraordinary. But I mean, who's qualified to answer the next question? I'm going to ask you the question, but I don't know that I'm qualified to. I don't know that anybody is, really. But is he going to get away with this as well, do you think?
Well, I think he is, and the reason I think he is because, I mean, your last caller referred to the religious kind of aspect of this, and you then went on to say that those people, the Christians that support him, approve of the most diabolic things you could imagine.
Yes.
And I personally think, I've definitely got Trump derangement syndrome, because...
Yes. Well, so there's you caring about abused children and caring about the country and caring... How dare you be so flipping woke and snowflakey.
And mocking someone with cerebral palsy. I mean, do you remember that?
Yes,
that
of course I do.
Sign to me, like, this is disgusting. But anyway, so I've read so many books on it because I wanted to understand why people would follow this awful man.
Mm.
And I've come to the conclusion that he is like a cult leader. People with religious views that don't really like what Jesus taught can kind of say, well, Trump does represent Christianity for some unknown reason. I mean, he doesn't really even claim to be a Christian, but for some reason they're going along with that. And he allows this me to act in my basest way and still say I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you'll find a lot of those people that you mentioned, you know, church leaders who turn out to be paedophiles themselves. It's like he gives them permission. You can still say you're a Christian and do these diabolical things.
Well,
they've invested so much into him, everything, haven't they?
And of course, what he's done latterly in the second term is literally pardon people who've committed terrible crimes. Not just the insurrectionists of January the 6th, but all manner of criminals who just appear to have earned his favour, sending a huge message to his, quotes, base, end quotes, that if they are sufficiently committed to his cause, then they are allowed to commit crimes with relative impunity. And that's not even an exaggeration. It's literally happening. But remember, if you care about criminals being pardoned and freed to commit more crimes, as has happened in the case of some insurrectionists, then you, like Anna and like me, you're suffering from Trump derangement syndrome. In 1930s Germany, I presume lots of people were accused of suffering from Hitler derangement syndrome. And I bet they feel pretty stupid now. 10:30 is the time. Lottie Morley's here with your headlines.
Official figures show economic growth in the UK slowed to 0.1% in the 3 months to September. Experts say the final figures ahead of the budget are lower than they expected. A review has found Sara Sharif, who was murdered by her father and stepmother, was failed by the safeguarding system throughout her life. The 10-year-old's father, Irvin Sharif, is said to have manipulated authorities into missing opportunities to protect her. She was found dead at her home in Woking in 2023. And senior Republicans are calling for the full release of documents relating to sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Thousands of files were published yesterday showing claims Donald Trump once spent hours with a victim. The US president denies any wrongdoing in relation to Epstein. LBC weather, rain will ease across Northern England, Southern Scotland and Northern Ireland this afternoon. Dry elsewhere with highs of 16 degrees.
This is LBC.
The Lotto £15 million jackpot must be won this Saturday.
You heard that right. Lotto's £15 million jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Exactly. Must be won.
And very exciting news, it could be you.
Me?
Yup, as long as you have a ticket, you're in with a chance.
Well then, I'd best grab a ticket.
Lotto's £15 million jackpot must be won this Saturday, or thousands of you will win a share of the prize. Get your ticket today. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Prizes rounded down to the nearest pound. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Waitrose presents...
And the main event.
One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Ain't that for me?
Sometimes it whispers.
I saved his best bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble, wrapped in dry-cured beetroot smoked bacon, with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Ooh, thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots, available to order online and in stores from 19th of December.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helps advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 10:32. If you're a journalist and you're not asking questions about this case, you should be ashamed of yourself. What purpose do you even serve? I'm sure there's a middle-class teenager somewhere who could use some harassing right now, but maybe try to do your job once in a while. Who do you think said that about the Epstein files? Was it A, Nigel Farage? Was it B, J.D. Vance? Or was it C, Peter Mandelson? Who do you think said back in 2021, so just 4 short years ago, that the even posed the question, what possible interest would the US government have in keeping Epstein's clients secret? And then added, oh, which I rather like to deploy on social media as well to express mock surprise or to feign surprise. And then went on, this person, if you're a journalist and you're not asking questions about this case, you should be ashamed of yourself. What purpose do you even serve? I'm sure there's a middle-class teenager somewhere who could use some harassing right now, but maybe try to do your job once in a while. Who said that then? Who do you think said that? Was it A? Who was my A? I've forgotten who my A was. B, J.D. Vance. A, Nigel Farage. B, J.D. Vance. Or C, Peter Mandelson. Who was it? Who do you think said that? I'll give you a clue. It is by far the most embarrassing for Trump of those three people. So that's the bit I'm trying to pin down. Why would even the vice president, because 'twas he, be calling for this to happen in 2021 and be part of an administration that is furiously resisting it in 2025? For the record, I agree with him. I agreed with Nigel Farage yesterday. I completely think that we should use Kent County Council as a blueprint for looking at what the country would be like if it were run by reform. And more news from Kent County Council coming up, well, either later in the programme, if I remember, or when Henry Reilly gets back from his holidays next week. One or the other. It swings and roundabouts. So yesterday I found myself agreeing with Nigel Farage. We should, and with Keir Starmer, who made the same point in PMQs about half an hour after we did on the programme. We should absolutely be looking at Kent as a blueprint for how Reform UK would run the country. And today I agree with J.D. Vance. You see, this is the wonderful thing about not suffering from blind partisanship or footballification extraordinaire. You can agree with people that you normally disagree with if the facts are clear. If you're a journalist and you're not asking questions about this case, you should be ashamed of yourself. I would add, if you're deploying the phrase Trump derangement syndrome with a straight face, you should be even more ashamed of yourself. But sadly, we're largely speaking to people incapable of shame when we describe that cohort. But he goes on, what purpose do you even serve? I'm sure there's a middle-class teenager somewhere who could use some harassing right now, but maybe try to do your job once in a while. I think it's fair to say that that particular intervention from the now vice president has aged like milk. Wolf is in Denmead in Hampshire to steer us back to these questions. Wolf, what would you like to say?
Okay, well, my first question is one for you, which is that, why was it that you think and what that you stated that Trump campaigned on releasing Epstein files?
Because he said that, because
he gave you that impression.
Because he said that he would. He said that he'd have no problem releasing more files related to convicted sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein if he returns to the White House. I mean, the quote from J.D. Vance seems to speak for the MAGA movement, doesn't it? When they thought that it was all on the Democrats, this failure to release the details. So, I mean, campaign perhaps might be a little bit strong, but the,
He never mentioned it.
He did.
About it,
oh, I see what you mean. He never mentioned it unprompted.
Yeah, he didn't bring it up ever. And when he was asked about it, his reply was extremely cagey. And it was pointedly so because it followed on from him being asked other questions, which he answered straight away with no hesitation and no equivocation in Trump fashion. And then when it came to Epstein, he was suddenly a lot more cautious about what he said. And I think this goes to a larger point, which is that people tend to build up images and visions in their head of who they think prominent figures are,
yes,
and pin all their hopes on them and don't actually evaluate what those figures say or what their actions have been in the past. And this speaks to your other question, which is that if it comes out that there's even worse, which, let's be honest, there almost certainly is.
Well, that's Occam's razor, isn't it? I mean, why wouldn't you release it all now? The only answer that fits all of the available questions is that it's going to make things even worse than they are already. In fact, it's going to make it even worse than refusing to, which is bad.
Yes. And but he will get away with it. He will absolutely get away with it because his base have put so much faith in him as being their savior. It's a religious zeal almost. And I don't mean to downplay people who are genuinely religious.
No, of course
but
not.
It's a level of idolatry that they give him because he is going to be the answer to all of their problems. He is going to fix the world. And this is not unique to Trump. We see this all over. In British politics, we see this all the time. Boris Johnson was going to be the answer.
And people excused and all manner was, of, yes, and yeah, again, with both people excused all manner of transgressions.
Jeremy Corbyn was going to be the answer. Now Zach Polanski is going to be the answer. Now, personally, I think Zach Polanski is awesome, and he's really stretching my resolve not to put anyone on a pedestal, because he's very clear, but very clear and concise in how he communicates. But that's not the point. The point is that you build up expectations of these people and you pin all of your hopes on them, because it's easy and simple to say this person is going to change everything.
Have you been reading Tim Harford in the Financial Times today?
No, I haven't.
Well, it's an extraordinary coincidence, because he's written a piece that makes many of the points you've just made, and I think it's best summed up as populism appealing to people who really hate being told that things are more complicated than they realise.
Yes, it's that old cartoon of easy but wrong and complicated and hard, and all of the people obviously go to the easy but wrong.
Yes, and you can't always blame them for it. And Trump plays into this very, very, very enthusiastically,
doesn't
he?
I can absolutely blame them for it, and I do.
Okay, but there's an awful lot of effort put into leading them towards the easy but wrong, and an awful lot of people who should know better are complicit in it. What about the fact, I think the Jewish space laser lady has broken ranks, hasn't she, Marjorie Taylor? It used to be funny. I'm glad you can still laugh about it. Marjorie Taylor Greene has put her signature already, and she may remove it. I think pressure was being put upon her in the White House yesterday. But you heard how our news bulletin is being led correctly this morning, which is senior Republicans are calling for this now, and they spend their lives in terror and in thrall in equal measure to Donald Trump, and yet on this issue they are currently unbending the knee. Why?
I think that they're scared of the potential consequences for them specifically.
Well, that means that they don't think he is going to walk away from it.
There's a good chance they're hedging their bets.
It's a pretty big hedge, isn't it? If you're going to incur the wrath of Trump, albeit that his wrath never seems to last more than 24 hours, which is both a strength and a weakness, I suppose. But they are breaking
ranks. None
of
these people, as far as I can tell, have any principles. They're opportunists. And
if they had any principles, they'd have broken ranks sooner.
Yeah, absolutely. They'd have broken ranks straight away. But Trump, as you say, his wrath never lasts. And he has brought people up to political positions, high positions in his team. People that have openly criticised him, and people he's openly criticised in the past. It doesn't seem to matter. I don't think, as long as you eventually toe the party line, that's all that matters to him.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that time and time and time again, he, up to and including people like Volodymyr Zelensky, who can go from being, you know, abased and abused in the White House to being back in favour again. It is extraordinary, what do you call it, sort of mercurialness or cartilaginousness, whereby nothing matters except moving forward, like a day trader. The only thing that matters is the result at the end of today, and tomorrow you'll sell the things you were buying, you'll buy the things you were selling, you have commitment to nothing, and belief in diddly squat.
Exactly. There's a potential other aspect to this, and I'm embarrassed that I can't remember his name, but there is a very prominent political figure who I call essentially Trump's Dominic Cummings.
Stephen Miller.
Miller.
He even looks a bit like Cummings, actually.
He does, and he's very much, I won't say the power behind the throne necessarily, but the brain behind the throne, all of the sort of ICE
Project 2025.
His project. And I do wonder if the other Republicans are either scared of him rather than Trump, or whether they're being, whipped, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't have found, I don't know that you'd have found a single one prior to the inauguration this year. I don't think you'd have found a single Republican who would have said, we definitely don't want the Epstein files to be released, would you?
No, then
lo and behold...
Even Donald Trump couldn't bring himself to say that, and he will say literally anything.
Yeah, well, that's very true. And that point, thank you, Wolf. You've probably had to deal with this before, but John just wants to clarify, you're not the bloke from Gladiators, are you?
No, it's very useful, because when I'm introducing myself, people seem to find it hard to cope with the fact that someone can just be called Wolf, W-O-L-F. So I used to introduce myself as Wolf, like the Gladiator. That's a less much less relevant reference now. But it's
that speaks to the demographic, perhaps. Although we are increasingly popular among the youth, as you might expect, for a programme that frequently goes viral. Well, thank you. It's coming up to 11:15. That point there with Vance is really interesting, isn't it? Because I don't even know if you describe it as a theory. It's so obviously true. It doesn't. When does a theory become a fact? Donald Trump is trying to create a media ecosystem in which nobody can get, nobody who's likely to ask him an uncomfortable question or a difficult question is going to be able to get close to him. I mean, literally, it's tragic this week to see the Daily Telegraph helping him essentially create an ecosystem in which he doesn't have to brook criticism or deal with difficult questions. But it applies to the whole administration. So who on the list that Simon Marks often runs through of various sort of far-right bloggers and weirdos who now constitute most of the White House press corps, who on that list is likely to ask J.D. Vance about that time that he said, if you're a journalist and you're not asking questions about the Epstein case, you should be ashamed of yourself. What purpose do you even serve? I'm sure there's a middle-class teenager somewhere who could use some harassing right now, but maybe try to do your job once in a while. I'm drawn, because I'm weird, and I've done this job for 20 years, I am drawn to obfuscation and political dishonesty almost as a spectator sport, a bit like in The Thick of It when Malcolm Tucker is on in his pomp and he could almost spin his way out of anything. Do you know, I can't remember whether I've ever told you this before, I came up with a format for a game show in the heyday of sort of spin doctors and Alistair Campbell and Peter Mandelson. And the idea was that you'd spin a wheel. I'm sure someone else has done this. They'd probably done it before I came up with the format. Nearly got commissioned. I got paid for it. It's extraordinary. During a period of my career when I wasn't getting paid for very much. So it was very, very welcome. You sort of spin a wheel. So you have a team of comedians and spin doctors and politicians. And you spin a wheel. Or two or three wheels, and a combination of words come up that creates a scandal, and you're automatically charged with trying to spin your way out of it. I would actually quite like to hear J.D. Vance explain why suddenly journalists should not be asking lots of questions about the Epstein case, and why it is no longer significant to wonder why the US government might be keeping Epstein's client list secret. What's changed in the space of the last 4 years, J.D.? What's changed, mate? But as I say, we are watching in real time fairly desperate attempts to ensure that the White House press corps contains precisely nobody who would have either the integrity or the guts to ask that question. Go on, prove me wrong. It's 10:46.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
The high street pub that we had in my town's gone. The small joys, the fish and chips on a Friday, going to the cinema. We looked at taking the kids to the cinema on Sunday. Forget it. It's like 60 quid, so we're not going to bother with that. All of those sort of small joys, the reasons why you do it, Lib Dems say are becoming an unaffordable luxury for too many. And they're right. And that says something about the state of the country.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Step aboard the legend of the Titanic, London's award-winning exhibition devoted to the world's most famous ocean liner at Dock X Canada Water. Walk her decks, explore her cabins, discover her secrets. With 360-degree projections, VR, an interactive metaverse, artifacts and more. Book your tickets today at legendoftitanic.com.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off,
said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
You plan a holiday, you plan a commute, meal plans, career plans, even workouts need a plan. So doesn't it stand to reason that your money has one too? Because the sad truth is, if it doesn't, it's just sitting there, barely growing, if at all. That's why you need a money plan, and Quilter can help. It's a lot easier to stick to than a workout plan. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
At Laithwaite's, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high, and low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf, we don't go there. Off the beaten track, we certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
It is 10 minutes to 11 and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Okay, so I've done one multiple choice question for you. That was the question of who essentially wondered sarcastically what possible interest the US government would have in keeping Epstein's clients secret. And I asked you whether it was A, Nigel Farage, who sort of oscillates between finding Donald Trump or Vladimir Putin, the politician he admires most in the world, doesn't he? Was it B, J.D. Vance, the current vice president, or was it C, Peter Mandelson, another person who remained close to Epstein after he had been convicted? And the answer was J.D. Vance. It's the now vice president who attacked journalists 4 years ago for not asking enough questions about this case. Who on June the 5th of this year, isn't it mad how quickly things move? Who on June the 5th of this year suggested that Trump wasn't releasing the Epstein files because he was in them? Who do you think made that claim? Was it A, Elon Musk? Was it B, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California? Or was it C, Peter Mandelson, the former ambassador to Washington? Who claimed that the reason why Trump wasn't releasing the Epstein files that he'd previously expressed a willingness to release, because he was actually in them, something which, of course, we now know to be true? Was it A, Elon Musk, the very rich man who has turned Twitter into a racist sewer and thinks nothing of saluting in ways that appear to be irrefutably Nazi? Was it B, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California? Or was it C, Peter Mandelson, the former ambassador to the United States? Well, I'll tell you in a minute. You may already know. But again, it is the person that would be most embarrassing to anybody who tries to use the phrase Trump derangement syndrome as a pejorative or an insult. I'm not saying that they all want the details of a paedophile's contacts book to be kept secret for personal reasons. Some of them are just too, what would we say, morally lazy, intellectually lazy to understand why Donald Trump's utter unfitness for office, even as you have to legislate for a world in which he has that office, is an area of epic historical and political interest. 10:52 is the time. Speaking of questions, mystery hours on the way from 12. Do not forget. We go from Gavin Newsom to Gavin in Houston.
Gavin in Houston, yes.
Which is a wordplay that probably only delights me and nobody else. Gavin, what would you like to say?
I think your previous callers have covered most of it, but as far as in terms of him getting away with it, I think the wider issue that we're not really talking about is the billionaire class who are involved in this as well, which I think that they're the main people that I think Donald Trump is in them. To what extent, we don't know yet, but I'm sure we will. But what I think the wider issue is how deep this really goes.
And that would explain, I mean, this is the mad bit, isn't it, mate? Because, you know, this is where the tinfoil hats perhaps become a little bit more realistic than they have in the past. The idea that this desperation to keep it all secret isn't just about one man.
No, And I certainly don't think it is. I think that he is involved, whether it's
We know he's in the files. Something that was previously denied. And
we know he was on the plane. We know he's been to the house. And
we know that Epstein says he was on the plane, or Epstein says he went to the house.
Yeah, well, flight logs and stuff like that show that he was. But what came out last night that he spent
hours with one of the plane. I'm not 100% sure. I'm only going off what we know from yesterday, which is that he spent hours with one of the victims in Jeffrey Epstein's house. Stop interrupting me when I'm making sure I don't get sued. According to what Jeffrey Epstein said in the emails, we also know that Donald Trump was told back in May by the Attorney General that his name appeared in the Jeffrey Epstein files, and that appears to be the point at which his willingness to release them disappeared like a puff of smoke. And we also know, just to clarify my last multiple choice question, that it was Elon Musk who claimed in June, he's now deleted it, that Trump wasn't releasing the files because he was in them. But you quite rightly suggest, or you quite persuasively suggest, it's unlikely to stop with Trump.
No, I don't think it does. I think Senator Massey alluded to, couldn't name, obviously, for legal reasons.
Yes.
Record producers, well-known film producers, so on and so on. At least 10 billionaires that are named in these files, for want of a better word. So this is what is interesting me about it mainly, is how deep and wide this really goes.
Yeah, in terms of why Trump has changed his tune about releasing the files,
he himself did not campaign on this. It was the MAGA base, and previous callers have mentioned this. That's what I've seen, is that it was the MAGA base that had this bit between their teeth.
Yeah, that's very true. And some still do, of course. That's why it's the first split in that cohort, isn't it? Because they still do. Some still do. Some have abandoned it in a heartbeat.
And because I think the sociopath that Donald Trump is, I don't think he probably, his involvement doesn't mean anything to him. But what's happened is his MAGA base have now so vociferously campaigned on this that he doesn't have a choice, and now I think what he's more interested in, because he's been part of this bloody billionaire class for so long, that he's now protecting them, and that's his raison d'etre, is to protect this movement, this class that have been moving around the world doing what they want to for obviously a very long time.
And that does move into territory ordinarily associated with conspiracy theories. But look, if very powerful and rich men are abusing young women and girls, as the Epstein case irresistibly suggests, then the efforts to cover up those crimes will be commensurate with the wealth and status of the men who've committed them. I don't think that is tinfoil hat territory. And of course the fact that, well, let's run through the timeline, because this might help some people understand the tension between, did he campaign on this promise, or did he repeatedly make this promise after he got into power, and abandoned it only after he was told by Pam Bondi that he was in the file. So March the 1st, the woman he appointed to be Attorney General tells Fox News that Americans will, and I quote, get the full Epstein files, end quotes, subject to redactions only to, and I quote, project grand jury information and confidential witnesses. So a fairly straightforward promise to release everything that wouldn't compromise other criminal cases or people perhaps living under witness protection. That's March the 1st. March the 3rd, back on Fox, she reveals that the Department of Justice has reviewed a new, quote, truckload of evidence from the FBI. A truckload of evidence from the FBI. And then she adds that everything's going to come out to the public. This is the woman that he, Donald Trump, appointed to the big job, to Attorney General. Actually, to go back even further, February the 27th, right-wing social media influencers, remember what I said about wanting to create an ecosystem in which nobody has any interest in embarrassing him or asking him difficult questions, they literally get invited to the White House, and they get handed documents that are, it turns out when they start going through them, mostly old news, a point that many of the influencers handed this unsmoking gun, if there is such a thing, made at the time. All this is on the record. This is what I mean by how quickly it gets overlooked and forgotten. The Attorney General also, when asked by Fox News about an Epstein client list a little earlier in February, responded by saying that it's sitting on my desk right now to review. And you say to, I mean, this is what I mean by breaking things. Whether she's telling the truth or lying, this is a disaster for people who care about transparency and integrity. Because if she was lying, it's obviously a disaster. And if she was telling the truth, they're now claiming that she never said it, or that if she did, she was referring to other documents. Where's the Epstein client list? Attorney General responds, it's sitting on my desk right now. The day before they gave those dossiers to right-wing social media influencers, she claimed that the documents would constitute breaking news and would include, quotes, a lot of information. Spoiler alert, they didn't. So back to the middle of March, a truckload of documents that she said she would get out as much as we can, as fast as we can, to the American people because they deserve to know. That's in March. It's only November in the same year. And Trump is calling it a hoax, claiming that it's a Democrat invention, arguing that everyone should ignore it and move on. As recently as March, the woman he appointed to Attorney General was telling Fox News that we are, and I quote again, releasing all of these documents as soon as we can to get them redacted to protect the victims. And then asked on April the 22nd in the Oval Office about when the files would be released, Donald Trump said 100% of all these documents are being delivered. And now, of course, they're saying the exact opposite. If you think there's anything dodgy or suspect or dangerous or dishonest or corrupt or misleading or confusing or wrong about any of that, then do not forget to report immediately to your local GP for a diagnosis of Trump derangement syndrome.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the UK's economic growth slowed to 0.1% in the third quarter, slower than experts predicted. It's the final set of figures from the Office for National Statistics ahead of the budget later this month. A fall in car production is said to be partly to blame after a major cyber attack on Jaguar Land Rover. Personal finance analyst at Evelyn Partners, Alice Hain, told LBC there are a number of reasons for the outcome.
Rising employment costs, sticky inflation, cooling labour market, geopolitical uncertainty and a lot of tax rise fears are all weighing on business and consumer sentiment in the UK. And that lacklustre GDP data will deliver a pretty heavy blow to Chancellor Rachel Reeves because she's only got 2 weeks until the autumn budget.
A major review has found Sara Sharif's murder was preventable and authorities missed multiple opportunities to protect her. The 10-year-old was killed by her father and stepmother at her home in Woking in 2023. Safeguarding consultant and social worker Joanna Nicholas says it should lead to fundamental change.
It is an absolute tragedy, and when you've worked in child protection for as long as I have, it becomes frustrating when you hear the same things and you find the same learning over and over again. Today, the most important thing is the horrific life and death that Zara suffered. But until we have a government that recognises we need to do more, we're going to carry on coming up with the same findings again and again and again.
Senior members of Donald Trump's own party are calling for the full release of all documents relating to Jeffrey Epstein. More than 20,000 pages of emails were published yesterday showing claims Donald Trump once spent hours with a victim. The White House says it's a smear campaign. The waiting list for routine hospital treatment in England has fallen slightly, having previously risen 3 months in a row. The NHS says more than 6 million patients were waiting at the end of September, 10,000 fewer than in August.
And parts of the UK can expect 80 millimetres of rain tomorrow as Storm Claudia sweeps in. Yellow and amber Met Office warnings have been issued for most of England and parts of Wales. The storm has already caused power cuts in Portugal and flight disruption in the Canaries. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 38 points at 98.72. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, rain easing in northern England, southern Scotland and Northern Ireland this afternoon, staying dry elsewhere with highs of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom at 4LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
There you were, prepping for the perfect date night at home. Love songs cued, cushions fluffed. There was just one thing missing. The food. But look at you now. With Deliveroo, you brought date night home in as little as 25 minutes. Their favourite pasta from the local Italian, nailed it. Or the perfect wine from your favourite supermarket, order it in. Deliveroo now just got even better. Subject to availability, delivery times vary. See in app, geographical restrictions, service and delivery fees and terms apply. 18 plus, drink responsibly.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Do you think that I exaggerate sometimes when I don't tell you that I don't know what we're going to talk about next? I wish sometimes you could have a red button to hear the exchanges between Eleanor and I just before that crescendo is completed. Or however it goes. Because I honestly don't know. I feel that I love this. I love the radio. I love it so much. And the thing I think I love most about it is how organic it is. And the fact that if I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth next, then, I mean, there's absolutely no way you do. Like, you can spot from about 1,000 miles away when people are reading on the radio, when they're not engaging in a proper conversation, they're not just doing what I expect you to do when you call in. Imagine if you rang in with a script and started reading from a script. It'd be even more offensive than me sitting here with a script and reading from it to you. It also makes you sort of wonder what you're actually getting paid for. If you might as well be working as a newspaper writer rather than a broadcaster. But I think we possibly take things a little bit too far on this programme. It certainly causes Keith and Rebecca and Eleanor some concern that at 5 minutes after 11 on a Thursday morning, they don't know what topic we're doing now. And there's no way that they can, because I don't know either. I've got two choices. I think I know which one I'm going to lean to. But the other one is really interesting as well. So there is a story in the news about, quotes, working class men, end quotes, and how many interesting phone-ins have we had over the years about what the heck that's supposed to mean in 2025, being less likely to go to the doctors than, quotes, middle class men, end quotes, and how many phone-ins have we had over the years about what the heck that's supposed to mean in 2025. And as a consequence of that, they are more likely to get prostate cancer. And the other story is the one that I promised we'd do yesterday, which is about what happens when you need to find a job. I'm going to lean into the second one. This is for the benefit of my colleagues, not you. I'm going to lean into the second one, lads. All right, we're doing the job stuff. You saw the figures yesterday; it had gone up to 15. I love these messages. Let me just have a little look at the history on this one to make sure that it is. Here we go. This is really funny. So here's a message from someone. It says, James, your first 15 minutes is always scripted. To which the obvious response is, mate, just press rewind on live radio and have another listen. But because I can press the history button on these messages, I can see the other messages that have been sent into the program. So somebody who honestly thinks I would sit down and write the often unhinged and entirely unlinked points that the weave, I'm doing the weave, they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats, I'm doing the weave. This character thinks that it is all scripted in advance, which is such a strange, why would I lie? But anyway, the last message they sent to the program was, Trump said peacefully, James, you can't pull the wool over our eyes, only your followers, which is in response to the program when we talked endlessly about how the fact that Trump's speechwriters had inserted a single sentence into his speech on January the 6th, urging his followers to behave peacefully. I think we said it at least 13 times. I may have an update for you on that as well. My friend James Ball has had a little look into that speech that has been dominating the news agenda this week. And how surprised would you be to discover that the so-called dossier that a right-wing lobbyist handed to his right-wing journalist friends shortly after ceasing to be an independent advisor to the BBC, that they got the actual fine detail, they got the text of the January the 6th speech wrong as well. How surprised would you be to discover that? We may have time to talk about it later in the programme. But look, the jobs figures are clearly bad news. You can find some analysis, I think Keir Starmer referred to it yesterday, that says there are now more people in work than there were before. But 5%. How old do you have to be to think of UB40 at this point in the conversation? Do you think of UB40 at this point in the conversation? So you've got to be older than what, 45 probably, to think of UB40 at this. So I say 5% of people are unemployed. That translates as 1 in 20, doesn't it? 1 in 20 people. So the reason why you think of UB40 is that in the early years of Margaret Thatcher's administration, the classic song 1 in 10 became very popular, which was about the unemployment figures in the early 80s, which stood at, as you can guess from the title of the UB40 lyrics, stood at 10%, so roughly double what they are now. I am the 1 in 10, a number on a list. Something, something, even though I don't exist. I can't remember. It's a classic tune. So classic, I can't remember the lyrics, but I love UB40. From my neck of the woods. Do you know, I once rented a drum kit off UB40. You can tell this is scripted, can't you? Do you know, I once rented a drum kit off UB40 back in the day. I didn't realise it was UB40's drum kit until it arrived, covered in stickers from the UB40 tour that had been used on previously. I may tell you that story one day. I am the 1 in 10. A number on a list. Sorry, I'm just checking my notes. The question I want to ask you is this. Does it apply to me? I mean, this is such a weird job. Well, if I lost my job tomorrow, try not to get too excited at the prospect. They'd probably drag Lewis Goodall kicking and screaming into the studio to do it in my place. If I lost my job tomorrow, would I be entitled to anything? If I was just phoning up contacts and trying to get a job in the same sort of field that I'm in now, or I was in the process of setting up my own YouTube channel or whatever it may be. If, God forbid, actually, while I'm on the subject, if a radio listener with no listeners, if a radio presenter with no listeners gets fired for being a racist and a liar, for example, does anybody know if he doesn't have any listeners? How would you establish concrete proof, perhaps, that a radio presenter with no listeners had been fired for being a racist and a liar if there weren't any listeners to report that he's not on the radio anymore? Or she, I suppose. It's a question for you to ponder. But if I mean, UB40 were named after an unemployment benefit, as Brett reminds us. But if I lost my job tomorrow and I was in the process of setting up a Substack and a YouTube channel, or I was just phoning around old contacts and colleagues asking if they had any holiday cover I could do, or if, you know, it was time for the BBC to invite me back into the fold and apologise for having accepted my withdrawal from presenting duties on the grounds that I've been proved absolutely right about Brexit, Donald Trump and Boris Johnson. What would my relationship with the welfare state be if I'm not? Because they say, well, I want you to go for this job as a... I always remember a friend of mine in Manchester in the early 90s who was an actor, and he's gone on to be quite a successful actor, but when he was signing on for his income support, it was quite an odd thing to say. And it was a lot easier to sign on for income support back then without necessarily breaking your back in pursuit of paid employment. I think it's Sean Ryder who said a lot of bands would simply not have existed were it not for some of the government support there was for creatives in that space. But He told them that he wanted to be an actor, and they said, well, we'll try and find you some work then. And he said, yeah, good luck with that. And they came out and said, we got you a job interview at Primetime Video, which was a sort of early precursor of Blockbuster. Because they thought that was sort of linked. I liked their logic. It was kind of linked to theatrics. It was linked to showbiz, at least. But if you lost your job tomorrow, if I lost my job tomorrow, I don't know that I would seek support from the system. Would I? I don't really need any help putting together a CV. What would happen if you lost your job tomorrow? So the 5% unemployment figure is high, not because of all the people that we talk about a lot on the programme, the people who aren't working, who are in unable to, or even in some cases choosing not to. The NEETs we focus on, don't we? The 16 to 24-year-olds, the nearly a million of them, about three quarters of a million, even if you exclude people who have been assigned off sick, who are not doing anything. We're finally getting that question right. We're finally having illuminating conversations about that after failing to do so the first two or three times we tilted at that particular windmill. But if you did lose your job, what happens next? And this is one of those subjects about which you'll know, I think, either everything or nothing. And as I've said to you many, many times in the past, they are sometimes my favourite subjects. So all I have, and this is a mark of how privileged my existence is and how insulated, indeed, from some of the realities of life you can become, all I have is memories of my father being made redundant in 1990. And the support he received being fairly minimal, but he was entitled immediately to sign on, and by doing so, he gained access to help putting together a CV. He hadn't needed a CV, my dad. I find it quite difficult talking about this, because he was of a generation that really perhaps imbued their job with too much of their personality. You know what I mean? A generation, men do this much more than women do, where the job and the man become very hard to distinguish from each other. The status you feel, your place in the world, is defined by the description on your business card. And a thing about my dad, he's not with us anymore, if you're new to the program, but he was brilliant at warning me against things that he didn't warn himself against. I always remember him telling me when I became showbiz editor of the Daily Express, then, and I was really excited. My head got a bit turned by the access I suddenly got to all these exciting places, like, you know, film premieres and album launches and exciting parties. I was a judge for the Brits and all this kind of thing. And my dad always said to me, it's not you, son, that's been invited to this party. It's not you that is being asked to do this. It's the job description on your business card. And yet, looking back, I realised that he was one of those guys who perhaps allowed too much of his self-image to be defined by his job. And then suddenly he didn't have it. And he was entitled to sign on, and he got a little bit of help with his CV. But the idea of the job centre being able to help Dad get another job on a national newspaper as a journalist would have been absolutely pie in the sky. And then you sort of move down from relatively white-collar work to relatively blue-collar work. If you spent 20 years doing a very specific job in a very specific production line, for example, what happens next? You just get on the phone, right? Or do you? So this isn't a theoretical question. This is a question of what actually happened. Because I want to answer what would happen by asking what actually happened. So do I want to? No, I'm not making anyone feel more welcome than anybody else, but I am especially interested in talking to people who'd never really contemplated the possibility of being unemployed. You are someone who thought it wouldn't happen to you. That's not a class-based question. You know, you could be working for a manufacturer that has been in business for 100 years, and therefore when you join the staff, you presume that it will be in business for another 100 years, which is going to comfortably include your entire working life. And then, for reasons, it goes belly up, it gets bought out, it gets shut down, whatever it may be. But you hadn't given. So there'll be people who've changed jobs loads and loads of times, either through choice or through necessity. And the cohort of people who never changed jobs is shrinking, of course, all the time. I guess it would be around about the end of the 80s that notion of a job for life began to appear very, very, very optimistic. The comforting belief that we all still have, until we don't, that there's somewhere you go. I lost my job today. Where do I go tomorrow? And what help is there? What is there? Now, I want to stress something before I throw open the phone lines And that is this. I'm conscious of two things. I'm conscious that I really don't know the answers to these questions. And that a lot of people listening to this won't. But of course, the reason why hopefully it'll be an interesting phone-in is because a lot of people listening to this program will. But the other bit is I know how lucky that makes me. I don't want you to think for a minute that I know or I believe that I deserve this by dint of talent or hard work or gifts. To have absolutely no idea about what happens to somebody or what somebody is supposed to do the day after they lose their job is a mark of enormous privilege and good luck, serendipity married to unearned advantage. I completely get that. And I don't want you to think for a nanosecond that I am not fully aware of how lucky that makes me. But it also makes me curious. So let's do it. 0345 6060973. If you lose your job today, what do you do tomorrow? What did you do the next day? And of course, all of this is underpinned by the question of how hard is it to get back into work? And what are the variables? What are the factors that make it harder for some people than it is for others? But in terms of what help is there, I have really no idea. Except that many people have told me over the years that the jobs of the people that we think are there to help us have increasingly, particularly since 2010, become almost gatekeepers of welfare payments, designed to almost turn us into people who won't get it or turn us into liars. But I want you just to tell me what happened to you. 0345 6060973 is the number you need. Just to tell me, and through me, people who could be facing this reality tomorrow or next week or next month. Sorry to float that boat, but you know that it's true. Always true, but perhaps a little bit more true at the moment than at other times. What do you do the next day? What do you do that day? What did you do in expectation of help and support? What did you find when you went looking for it? 0345 6060973.
This is LBC. Waitrose presents 3 for 2 on chilled party food.
Kelly, meet everyone.
Hi, nice to meet you.
8 guests, one host who knows exactly what will bring them together.
Food's ready.
Starring number one king prawn toasts with crispy sesame seeds, soft polar bear bao buns bursting with hoisin veg filling, and meltingly tender Wagyu beef mini pies.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Select Atlanta store, subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands, Little Waitrose and Partners and concessions. Cheapest item free.
It's easy to forget just how crazy things have been over the past couple of years. Every day we wake up to something new. Tariffs and taxes on anything and everything. It's tempting to put your hands in your ears and go, la 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 la, I can't hear you, until it's all over. But you know what's the best response to crazy times? A plan for your money. And Quilter can help. Because let's face it, there's probably going to be some crazy times ahead too. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future, with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
21 minutes after 11. I don't understand this, but so many people have made the same joke. I should probably share it with you. I've recently lost my job, James, and I am going to be opening a concrete farm. What does that mean? I don't understand that at all. Ian is in Chelmsford. Ian, what made you pick up the phone?
All right, mate.
Hello.
Me, 16 years listener, third time caller.
Stop it. These are not statistics that anybody needs. Carry on.
And I'm actually more nervous than I was last time.
Okay.
You're going to say, don't worry, it's only me.
I am.
So we can't say, that's the point,
okay.
It's you.
Well, I'm glad we got that out of the way. Now get on with it, for heaven's sake.
I've just got to put it there. Like, I haven't written a script, but I did take notes.
Okay.
So, I was working in the entertainment industry, and COVID came along, and I'd been trying to get a job up until that point for about 6, 7, 8 years, maybe even 10 years, but my timeline's not great sort of thing, but I've been trying to get a job for a long time, which I couldn't. And then I had the perfect job. It was the perfect job for me. Everything that my skill set was used for, whatever. Then a lot. And I remember saying to my wife, that's it, I'm going to lose my job. And she said, no.
Because of COVID. Right.
Well, because basically, like, I was in the middle of a deal.
Yeah.
That would have, like, set me up. Like, okay. I would have made a load of money. And I just thought, this ain't going to happen for me. Okay. And it didn't. So, anyway, long story short, like, that's went through all that. COVID happened. And basically, the company that was in the entertainment industry lost a load of money through trying to diversify through I don't know, I can hear my voice bouncing back at me from your
okay
side.
Let me just try and sort the phone line out if I can, and we'll come back to you. I don't know what was happening there, but don't worry, I'm sure it's on ours, not you. And when you do come back, I will nudge you politely towards the morning after. And having gone from sort of thinking that okay, we're okay now, to realising that you're not, and the vexed question of what on earth you do. Josh is in Chiswick. Josh, what would you like to say?
Hi there, James.
Hello.
I was just telling your lovely producer. I'm a TV producer, and I've been doing it since about 2001.
And did you ever hire me?
I sadly didn't.
Right, next caller, please.
I was more in sort of documentary.
Okay, I can do that. I'll send you my... Sorry, carry on. Where are we? This is a serious conversation.
Well,
I'd
love to have something to put you in, James, right, now, which is part of the reason why I'm calling.
Fair enough.
So basically, being freelance, you're lucky if you work sort of 9 or 10 months out of the year.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're compensated, you do all right. And that was the case pretty much up until COVID. COVID absolutely quashed everything.
Yeah.
I didn't, because I was sort of one of the excluded self-employed. I got some furlough, but not really enough to sustain me. And then the industry didn't really come back. It came back in like 2022, but unfortunately both my parents passed in that year. So I wasn't working. And then I've had bits and bobs here and there, but it's just, nothing has come back, and I actually haven't. My last paid gig was in July 2024. So it's not like someone gives you a redundancy package and shakes your hand and wishes you well. It's just the phone stops ringing and you're calling all your contacts, but there's nothing out there. You know, you're not even getting interviews for jobs that you're eminently qualified for. And sadly, I mean, you know, it could just down to a lack of talent, but there's about, the industry estimates that there's about 60% of television workers in what they call unscripted television, which is factual, who aren't working at the moment.
What were you expecting to find? Because I guess being self-employed puts you in a slightly different category from going from payroll to no payroll, because you've always had to do the hard scrabble, as it were.
Yes.
But the... did you have any inkling or impression of what the welfare state or the safety net or the state would do
in the event of you going
6 months without work or something like that?
I mean, I am in a very, very privileged position in that due to the very tragic passing of my parents, I came into a bit of money which has been enough to sustain me. So I'm not, you know, already I work in the media and, you know, I don't expect people to...
get their violins out.
Crying into my lattes. But
no,
like,
sure, but still, the job's a job, isn't it?
But a job's a job. So I haven't had any sort of experience with the welfare state. And maybe, actually, if I did try and go through, like, one of their job coaching things, it might help. I mean, one thing that has been good is I did find I went on a four-month training course, which was actually completely funded by the Department of Education.
Okay, that's the kind of thing I'm interested in. Was it any use to you?
Sorry, what was that?
Was it any use to you?
It has been used. I mean, I finished in the summer, and I'm just trying to move. It's actually into a sort of different part of television, like a more VFX part, which is called virtual production. So I'm trying to move into that, but it's not... I probably should have retrained in something that wasn't telly, because it feels like it's dying.
Because if they're not making programs, they're not making programs. If they don't need A, then they're probably not going to need B either. But how did you find out about the course?
I think I saw it on Facebook. And mostly it was on online, and then we did a few days in a University of Creative Arts in Farnham. It's I don't know if you know about virtual production. It's instead of using blue screens, you use really big walls of 4K LEDs to put in fake backgrounds.
Wow.
And it all uses, I know you're a bit of a gamer, James, you build the backgrounds using Unreal Engine.
Okay, yeah.
And so when you move the camera around, the backgrounds move as well.
That is interesting to me. I don't want to sound dismissive or cynical or unsympathetic at all, but that idea that if you looked, and albeit that you are having some misgivings about whether you should have actually looked at a different industry entirely, there was something state-funded there that was designed to actually help you,
yeah,
and which also recognised during the course of that four-month period that you wouldn't be earning any money or not.
Well,
you could have done it alongside paid work.
In some, the good thing was is that all the online, it was mostly online, so it was 4 months every evening online. So it was done in the evening. So you could have, if you had another job, you could have worked. But it was quite full on. There was quite a lot of learning to do. So it would have been hard to.
Do we know how big that is? Do we know how many of the? I mean, do we know how big that sector is? That kind of employment specific vocational training, state funded, state supported for people either between jobs or out of work or.
I don't have figures.
It's really interesting, isn't it? I did because that is what I wanted. Obviously, I hope you find something sooner rather than later. But the Department of Education funding. Retraining, that kind of thing answers a part of my question about what's actually there. It's coming up to 11:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I guess, in a way, perhaps the premise of my question is wrong. I'm already beginning to wonder because I'm thinking back many, many years to the only experience in my family of having to seek support, as it were. And the world is completely different now. I mean, do you even have... I mean, crikey, I went to the job centre myself once, ended up getting interviewed to be a sea lion trainer at West Midland Safari Park. I've told you that story before. But you don't still have, like, postcards on walls and things like that that you take, because, of course, technology would have replaced it. But do you even have the equivalent of that? If you lose your job today, what are you supposed to do tomorrow? And it's going to depend entirely upon what job you were doing today, isn't it? But some of the answers are going to have impact upon other people. If you lose, what are you supposed to do tomorrow? And how much did you know? How prepared were you? How ready were you for what you found? How surprised were you by what you found? And how useful was what you found? It's 11:30. Lottie Morley is here with your headlines.
The latest GDP figures are expected to pile pressure on Chancellor Rachel Reeves ahead of her budget. A sharp decline in manufacturing is being blamed for slower than expected growth for the UK's economy. A review has found there were multiple missed opportunities to save Sara Sharif, who was killed by her father and stepmother. It says the 10-year-old, who was found dead in her home in Woking in 2023, was failed by the safeguarding system. And the Prime Minister is under pressure to find who's responsible for accusing his cabinet members of planning a coup. Anonymous briefings to the media yesterday named Health Secretary Wes Streeting and Energy Secretary Ed Miliband as his challengers. LBC weather, rain easing in Northern England, Southern Scotland and Northern Ireland this afternoon, staying dry elsewhere with highs of 16 degrees.
The new LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
The Lotto £15 million jackpot must be won this Saturday.
You heard that right. Lotto's £15 million jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Exactly. Must be won.
And very exciting news, it could be you.
Me?
Yup, as long as you have a ticket, you're in with a chance.
Well then, I'd best grab a ticket.
Lotto's £15 million jackpot must be won this Saturday, or thousands of you will win a share of the prize. Get your ticket today. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Prizes rounded down to the nearest pound. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Do you ever
ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great-tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide, searching high, and we mean really high, and low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf, we don't go there. Off the beaten track, we certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:33 is the time. I didn't read this out because I got a bit confused. Did you hear the caller in the last hour called Wolf? That's what confused me, because there's a journalist called Michael Wolf with two Fs who appears in the emails that were released yesterday from Jeffrey Epstein and to Jeffrey Epstein's email account. And Michael Wolf appears in it. So when I saw this message from Ian in Cardiff, Wolf does appear to have, see Michael Wolf on Bannon meeting Epstein. I don't know why. I just saw Wolf. I didn't see Michael. But Epstein and Bannon shaking hands, and Bannon saying, you'll remember he was a key consigliere to Donald Trump at the 2016 election. Bannon said to Epstein, "You were the only thing we were afraid of." This is according to Michael Wolf, of course. I just let that wonder. Again, why on earth would Steve Bannon say that to Michael Wolf, or to Jeffrey Epstein, according to Michael Wolf? 11:34 is the time. Back to jobs. These are kind of what I worried about, what I thought we might discover. After 32 years as a registered nurse, writes Tom, I took redundancy. I didn't want any money from the state, but I had to sign on to keep my national insurance contributions. They told me I had to take the money and look for a job. I wanted some time off after so long working in mental health, and my redundancy allowed me to do that. They told me that they'd help me find a job, which was fair enough. At the next appointment, they told me to apply for a job in a warehouse, order picking, because they felt I had transferable skills. So I stopped signing on. Christopher tells me, I guess I'll be finding out soon how bad things can be. I'm currently going through my third fire and rehire in 5 years. I never thought my days at British Gas would come to an end. Same with many of my colleagues. But I have no idea what I'll do after the latest one at my current employer. I have no idea how I will keep a roof above my family's head. Well, that's part of the reason why I'm having this conversation. In the hope of putting some flesh on those bones. But if you've been through it two or three times, then I don't know that you're going to learn anything today. And that is in and of itself quite an important lesson, isn't it? Richard adds in from Newport to the notion, for want of a better word, that you need to sign on to get your national insurance stamps, which determine your eligibility for the old age pension. So don't be proud. And I like this from Andy in answer, taking things rather literally. What would you do tomorrow if you lost your job today? Andy writes, phone mum. Kaz is in Watford. Kaz, what made you pick up the phone?
Oh, hi there, James. Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a first time caller, so I'm very nervous.
No, you're not. You just think you are. It's a state of mind. Seriously, I'm just gonna look into my eyes. Look into my eyes. Look into my eyes. You are not nervous. Thank you very much. Carry on. We're back in the room.
Okay. So the first time, because this has happened several times, but the first time I was made redundant, it was completely out of the blue. I was quite young. I was raising a young child, and so it happened. And there was no real support. They didn't say, look, you've got to do this, that, and the other to get yourself an employment, go somewhere. I just knew that you had to go and sign on because, you know, everyone knows about the dole. So that's what I went and done. Now, it took so many weeks to actually get any money out of the system, which was really frightening because you know that you've been putting in for all, you know, for years, for your national insurance and all this type of thing. You then start feeling a bit of a failure when you have to go up there every 2 weeks because it's like, they're almost thinking, oh, you haven't got a job yet, so you're not really who you say you are. Let's have a look at this CV again. And eventually I just realised that most of the folks at the DWP were not as experienced as what I was. I was quite up to date with IT. I used to train people on IT. And for some reason, it just really took a while to understand what was happening to me. Just getting back into employment was taking a little bit longer than I wanted to, so I went to uni. That was a waste of time and money as well. And then 911 happened. So everything was just, you know, falling in on itself, and you are actually on your own.
Yeah. That's the biggest surprise, perhaps. And what does that mean? Does that mean you just get onto agencies, you get onto job sites?
You have to be so assertive. And people listening now, if you can start networking while you are in employment, even if you think you're never going to be out of employment, do it, because you're on your own. You become your own recruiter.
So LinkedIn becomes a big part of people's lives, I suppose. Because networking's hard to do, isn't it?
It's not really. You just got to be a bit more out of your own comfort zone.
Yeah, well, that's hard to do for some people. I'm rubbish at that.
I still can't even talk to some CEOs at companies, but I'm getting better at that now. And those are the things that you need to do. Just be talking.
So no help at all, in a nutshell. There's a line, isn't there? If you are in a position where, and most of us have been at this point some point in our lives, but as you get older, some of us would hope not to be anymore, which is not to sit in judgment on people who aren't or didn't, but if you consider like loads and loads of different jobs, then the system might help you. But if you have what we might loosely define as a career and you want to do something roughly within the parameters of that career, then I guess the tighter those parameters are, the less help there is likely to be for you.
Absolutely. LinkedIn's good, but you have to remember then you've got the algorithms that these recruiters are using. You can submit 100 CVs to lots of different places and everything comes back no, or even no reply. So
how do they decide who to hire, I wonder? How do people get the job?
You'd have to figure, well, some it's who you know, who you don't know.
Yeah, I guess some of it is, but I'm just going to stress again for anyone who's just tuned in, I am completely conscious of how privileged and detached I sound, dislocated I sound from the reality of the experience, but only essentially because I've had this job for so long. That's it. That's what makes me lucky, just because it's a weird job, supposedly quite, I don't know, is it a glamorous job? But you know what I mean. It's just the fact I've been here so long is the reason why I haven't got a clue what you do. The kids were younger. If I'd been on my uppers, if I'd lost my gig, if I'd had my sandwiches wrapped in a roadmap, I'd have had to sign on to keep my national insurance stuff, and I'd have wanted to work somewhere close to what I'd been doing before in some sort of communications or media type role. But what help would there have been? Answer, none, except from the private sector, from people who were going to take a commission on your wages, or people who were going to take money for helping you find a job, or people who were being paid by your potential employer to headhunt you. And how do you get into that? I mean, so much that's not known. It's weird, isn't it? It's weird. But that is great advice from Kaz. The more people you know, the more options you've got when you need to change your own script. Sarah is in Altrincham. Sarah, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James. Hello. Another nervous one, I'm afraid. Oh,
well, I don't know. What can I do to put you at your ease? Would you like a biscuit?
Oh, yes, please. No,
carry on. Garibaldi, Garibaldi or chocolate hobnob?
Ginger nuts for me.
Carry on, then.
So mine's a bit different. I actually left the job. I actually made myself unemployed. And it was because at the time I was working in quite a sort of high-pressured environment at quite senior level.
Yes.
My mother had an accident in Spain, and I had a phone call to say she won't recover, but she's not going to die quickly, which is not the best phone call to receive. I tried to carry on. Oh, yes, horrendous. And
yeah.
I did try carrying on. I spoke to them and I said, would I be able to work from Spain or work from home? And they said, yes, all was fine for 3 days. And then they started ringing me at 10 o'clock at night saying, we need this report completing by 9 a.m. And this went on and on.
Mm.
I couldn't do that and look after my mum. I came back to the UK after she died, came back to the job and was just completely bullied after that by my manager. Really belittled in front of people, and I had lots of direct reports, and she used to talk to them about me. It was just a horrendous experience. So I decided for my mental health, yes, I had to leave. This was 6 years ago, and I still to this day have awful anxiety.
I'm sorry.
So it's not. I've never had anxiety before, and it's. I wouldn't wish it upon anyone. It's awful.
Yeah, I know, and it's trauma you're describing. But of course, you know, just because some people might go through a similar experience and not be traumatized by it, allows some very unpleasant people to pretend that these things barely exist. But we know that they do. You more than
they
me.
They do. Well, they do. They really do. And I didn't know. I knew of anxiety, and I've heard some awful stories. But until you really, really experience it, it's just you just don't know.
Yes.
But, yeah, so I left. I had nothing better to do. And just to show the scale of the bullying and awfulness at work, I handed in my notice. I said, I'll work the whole month if you want me to. An hour later, she marched over to me, pulled the cable out of my laptop and marched me out of the premises as if I'd been fired.
How unpleasant. I'm sorry.
Yes, that's pretty rubbish. Anyway, since then, I did try to have another few sort of corporate role jobs at that same level, but the anxiety hadn't gone. So eventually I gave up, and I've never taken a single penny in benefits or never had any help financially. Fortunately, and it's one fortunate thing, my mother left me some money, so I was able to use that. But I've never been able to get back into work properly at that level, and I now work in a shop, which, to be fair, is nice.
Yes.
It is nice, but... You know, I didn't pay any national insurance for a couple of years, so that's obviously going to affect me later on down the line.
Gosh.
But I couldn't, there was no help. I tried to go to a local job centre, but that was, with anxiety, it's really hard when people are sort of barking things at you and offering you jobs that you know you couldn't do. I gave up on that and literally just survived on the money I was left and then got into... A job that I wouldn't have done before, but I do love, but I am on minimum wage.
And there was no path back into the kind of work you were in before that was plotted for you, that was there as a kind of systemic support. I mean, if given that you were both grieving and dealing with a former, I think, a post-traumatic stress disorder. Then you're not going to be... in a position to start, you know, licking stamps and hitting LinkedIn and getting on the internet and doing all the things that would have kicked down a few doors. I mean, it's important that we know this. I'm glad that you're happy doing what you're doing, but as you say, the difference in income is immense, and the commensurate impact upon lifestyle and future prospects and all of those things are just, you know... You don't think about them until you have to. You don't know anything about them until you suddenly need to know everything. Sarah, thank you. And you know, all the best. I always feel a little bit inadequate during conversations like this whole hour, because people describe to us situations that you wouldn't really want to be in, but there's not a great deal that we can do except listen. It's 11:45.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Traitor or a faithful? Is the health secretary on manoeuvres?
I think someone in Downing Street has been watching too much Celebrity Traitors, and this is just about the most appalling attack on a faithful I've seen since Joe Marler was banished in the final.
The game playing has begun in Westminster with rumours of a plot against the Prime Minister, an unhelpful distraction from a more immediate crisis on the horizon.
I think it's become increasingly clear that the BMA is no longer a professional voice for doctors. They are increasingly behaving in cartel-like behaviour. They threaten the future of the NHS full stop.
As Wes goes to war with the BMA, and number 10, your chance to put your questions to Health Secretary Wes Streeting in another exclusive Call the Cabinet.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Fishing. It's a wonderful way to spend an afternoon, but it could also be a huge threat to your business. Phishing emails are scams that trick you into giving away vital data, putting your company at risk. So how do you make sure you don't get caught, hook, line and sinker? Just ask BT.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future, with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Let's hear from the Chancellor, Geoffrey.
From the Chancellor, Nigel. Chancellor John.
Norman.
Kenneth.
Gordon.
Alistair.
George.
Philip.
Sajid.
Rishi.
Nadine.
Kwasi.
Jeremy.
And now Rachel. Another year, another budget. Over the past 40 years, we've seen it all. Our experts will continue to filter through the noise and uncertainty, helping you make the most of your tax allowances. Hargreaves Lansdown, helping Britain invest through it all. Capital at risk. Tax rules applying can change.
You asked, BT answered.
With phishing, awareness makes all the difference. Train your staff to spot suspicious emails and encourage them to slow down. Hackers rely on you being in a rush, so slowing down decreases your risk.
Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity to find out more.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
11:48 is the time. Some people are taking this a little bit literally. The question of what you would do in the event of you losing your job. I mean, if you lost your job today, what would you do tomorrow? I've received a voice note from someone called Steve.
What do you want to do if you're not an MP?
Skydiving, motorcycling, fast catamaran sailing.
Okay. I mean, everybody's different. Nathaniel's in Dover. Nathaniel, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Hi. Thanks for taking the call. So, eight or nine years ago, I was working for a company out of Waterloo. You know, corporate city, corporate property, that sort of thing. Mm. And for someone of my background, it was quite, you know, yeah, I've made it as a working class lad getting into the city.
Yeah.
Then, a year later, the rug was pulled under because the company went bust.
Oh.
So I went from on like £38,000 a year with a season ticket rail that I just bought, which I then had to go cash in the following day to actually, I can't cash in that rail ticket. I haven't got this money coming in. I better call the job centre. And it felt like what was weird is because I had this routine of getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, doing your day to day of getting on the train, falling asleep, watching whatever on the laptop, to me getting up at the same time, not knowing what to do with myself.
What do I do now? God, that's brilliantly put.
You know, and I went to the job centre. I had to get food bank support because there was also mucking us about with wages, like administrators tend to do from time
to time. So there's nothing coming in? That's it? There's more going out?
I was £2,500 short on my wages that month. And with three children, that's...
Well, you'd already spent it. I know what it's
absolutely.
Like.
But you know what the strange thing was? And I said this to the producer, right?
Go on.
And your conversation... You had a subject like this back in 2018.
Right.
I remember listening to it, and we had a conversation. I ended up getting a job because of you rather than the job centre back then, and I actually called you back to say that someone had listened, heard about my credentials and what had happened, and then you cheekily asked for a finder's fee.
I never got it.
Yeah, and I haven't been unemployed since, to be fair with you, but... My dad put in, like you said, with your dad teaching you things he wish he did.
Yeah.
My dad went through the Thatcher years, working in the pits, minor strikes, that sort of thing. Oh, yeah. So gave me the sort of, always make sure you're working.
Mm.
But my God, going from corporate city to interviewing for a salad factory, that's quite a difference to then be told you're overqualified for jobs which you just need the money coming in. So the job centre, unfortunately, tries a one-size-fits-all approach, and when you've got people like nurses and this sort of thing, it's not geared up for it, man. There was no budget in support at the time. There was no support.
You're on your own, is what I'm hearing. Is you're on your own, and I mean that is not in and of itself a disaster because you know it's like you can call in contacts, you can get online. There's things you can do, but that's probably a big surprise to most people. If they've never been there before. And they suddenly find themselves in that moment. To discover that you are on your own is probably a bit of a shock.
Scary. It was absolutely scary because then I started the whole victim spiral of blaming myself for letting the kids down, all this sort of thing. But thanks to a certain rumbunctious radio presenter.
Well, I'll take that to the bank. That's lovely. And you've changed jobs since, but you've never been out of work, so you've just sort of...
I've never been out of work. I've just finished at the NHS, but, I've never been out of work since, and it's probably going to get a lot worse because of all the redundancies coming up in my job.
I hope not, but you do. I mean, I guess being, what's the word, nimble is quite a big thing, and maybe the days of thinking, well, I have to be doing something within the field that I was in before are increasingly numbered, if not already out. And can you talk to Eleanor about the finder's fee, Nathaniel? Because, you know, mate, I don't do this for free. You know, commission's commission. I'm not a charity. 11:52 is the time. James Ball is the political editor of The New World, which I have to tell you, I've told you before, but I will tell you again, if you despair, as I often do, at the... I mean, listen, I think of a story, any story, and predict what kind of coverage it will get in the massive majority of UK newspapers if it is not sympathetic to the interests of wealth, people who told you to vote for Brexit, or people who use Trump derangement syndrome as a pejorative. And then you'll get an idea of just how desiccated the media landscape is and why I increasingly find myself doing a little skip through the hall of my house when the New World has landed on my doormat of a morning. That and Private Eye, probably the most welcome things to drop through my letterbox on a regular basis. And James is, as I say, the political editor of that newspaper. Used to be the New European, if you're wondering why you haven't heard of it before. You have now. And James has a habit of coming up with things that make me go, what? And he's done it again. I'm just going to let you tell me the story, James, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised by this one. I wish I could say I'd done some amazing journalism or some great investigation here. I really do. I love to hype myself up. But I was going to do a bit of analysis on the whole BBC row and this dossier. And of course, the whole centre of the row is where the Panorama misquoted Donald Trump. And they took a couple of little things he said in an hour-long speech and put them together. And the allegation is that they misleadingly suggested that Trump incited the January the 6th riots, which, of course, he incited. You know, congressional reports found this. Courts have found this. There are reams of evidence for this. But I went and read the quote as it was in this dossier produced by this external advisor, Michael Prescott. And the quote just sort of looked a little bit odd to me because I've read this speech and I just sort of thought, hey, I'll just look up where this is. And when I looked in the actual speech, the transcript's online, anyone could have done this at any time, including the BBC.
I thought I had. This is why I should put my hands up and express a degree of embarrassment here, because I thought I had done it, and yet I missed what you're about to describe.
Yeah, and so Michael Prescott has him say, we're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be with you. I know that everyone here will soon be marching to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard. Now, Trump does say all of those words, but not in those order. And in between, he says things like, you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength and you have to be strong. We have come to demand that Congress do the right thing. Now, those all sound like threats to me. Those all sound quite important things. But even if they weren't, this whole complaint is about altering quotes. And even in print, there are ways you show you've altered a quote. You put in an ellipsis, you break it up. This was said as exactly what Trump said. And so this bloody dossier that supposedly says that Panorama has done this mortal sin against broadcasting, that Trump's suing for $1 billion, has done something at least as bad, and I think arguably worse. And it took me to notice it.
You've won a Pulitzer Prize in the past. Stop it with the self-deprecation, James Ball. You've won a Pulitzer Prize in the past. I'm less surprised than you are. But, I mean, to be clear, this Prescott character has abridged a quote. He has edited a quote and not made it clear while attacking the BBC for editing quotes and not making it clear.
Yeah, and in a dossier that has brought down the two most senior executives of the BBC and started an international incident, and potentially, let's not forget, the BBC is publicly funded. Any money it has to spend defending itself against Trump is money out of our pockets as licence fee payers. Now, I want the BBC to stand up for itself, I'll spend that. But if all of this is based off a misleading edit itself, I think that's a scandal.
I know that you are backstage somewhere exciting at the moment, which accounts for the chatter. No, you don't have to apologise. I'm just apologising to the listeners for the chatter in the background. It's not your fault. And as you say, I mean, this line here, you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength. You have to be strong. We demand that Congress do the right thing. Is at the very least challenging to, if not contradictory of, the following line, reportedly inserted by speechwriters, that he knows everyone will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard. I introduced you by suggesting that some stuff that is clearly newsworthy and in the public interest mysteriously doesn't make its way into most organs in the media ecosphere in this country at the moment. Are you expecting this to get picked up by, for example, the Daily Telegraph?
I mean, there's so far been a bit of silence. It seems that selectively editing a quote is very, very serious in some cases and a lot less serious in others. I mean, can you imagine another scenario where a very senior BBC advisor who's been hyped up misleadingly edits something in this way? It's in plain sight for a week, and now it's been picked up and reported. Pretty much crickets around there.
This is insane. Absolutely insane.
The stuff in the midst is so strong. It's so striking.
It changes the meaning. It changes the meaning. It changes the meaning of the quote in the dossier in the same way that the edit of the Panorama programme arguably changed the meaning of what Donald Trump was saying in the context of whether or not he incited the insurrection. Of course, it doesn't change the meaning, but it just distills down elements. And the argument was it glosses over or doesn't properly address the bit about peacefully and patriotically. But the bloke who wrote the dossier has done something extremely similar to outside eyes.
Yes, it feels like Michael Prescott understands that sometimes you abridge a quote to make your point.
More powerful.
When he does it, and yet thinks it's outrageous when... And this is the editorial standards guy. This is the person who's supposedly enforcing this. And he did it invisibly. And so does seem to be a mismatch in standards here, doesn't there?
Well, it does indeed. I also read repeatedly that he'd been political editor of the Sunday Times for 10 years, which doesn't seem to stack up either.
Yes, it seemed an interesting claim, because I was wondering what it was, because, I mean, I've covered politics quite a long time now, and he didn't really ring much of a bell for me.
Four years, I think, was certainly what I could tell. But I don't know where that claim came from. It may have been made by other people. Again, something that you'd expect to be on the front page of tomorrow's Daily Telegraph. James Ball, thank you. You can read this story and more. Some great pieces, actually. Marie Leconte reporting from New York after that mayoral election, and it's a great piece by Matthew D'Ancona as well about Farage. This Prescott character has insisted that he has no political motivations in raising his concerns, which he took straight to the Daily Telegraph before returning to work as a lobbyist for a firm that has contracts with many companies very close to Donald Trump. Just for clarification, it's very important to make these points. It's 12 noon. It's Thursday. You know what that means. Oh, yes, it's Mystery Hour. And for the second week running, I can remember the question that I want to ask you.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday. In the past few minutes, it's been confirmed police and crime commissioners are going to be scrapped across England and Wales. The Home Office says the move will save the taxpayer at least £100 million and help to put frontline officers back on the beat. Policing Minister Sarah Jones has been speaking in the Commons.
The model has failed to live up to expectations. It has not delivered what it was set up to achieve. Public understanding of and engagement with our police and crime commissioners remains low, despite efforts to raise their profile. Less than a quarter of voters turned out to vote for them in the 2024 elections, and 2 in 5 people are unaware PCCs even exist.
The latest GDP figures are expected to pile pressure on Chancellor Rachel Reeves ahead of her budget this month. A sharp decline in manufacturing is being blamed for slower than expected growth for the UK's economy. Energy Secretary Ed Miliband told LBC it's not what the government was hoping for.
The disappointing figures. And look, there are some global headwinds. There were some specific factors around JLR and the cyber attack which have affected these figures. But I'm making no bones about it. It's disappointing. We're focused on growth because we want to raise living standards. And I know the Chancellor will be redoubling her efforts. We all redouble our efforts.
A major report has found Sara Sharif was failed by the safeguarding system repeatedly throughout her life. The 10-year-old was killed at her home in Woking by her father and stepmother in 2023. LBC's Emma Corr has the details.
The reports found there were multiple chances missed to protect Sara, despite knowing her father was a serial perpetrator of domestic abuse. It states her father and stepmother were a lethal combination who should never have been trusted with her care.
Sir Keir Starmer is under pressure to find who's responsible for accusing his cabinet members of planning a coup. Anonymous briefings to the media yesterday named Health Secretary Wes Streeting and Energy Secretary Ed Miliband as his challengers. And weather warnings have been stepped up ahead of the arrival of Storm Claudia. The Met Office has issued an amber one for the Midlands tomorrow, meaning flood water could pose a risk to life. The storm has already caused power cuts and travel disruption in Spain and Portugal. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 55 points at 98.56. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, rain easing in northern England, southern Scotland and Northern Ireland throughout this afternoon, staying dry elsewhere with highs of 16 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
This is LBC. From Global, leading Britain's conversation, Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
It is 4 minutes after 12 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Mystery Hour is upon us, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. And for the third week, is it? Or the fourth week? Quite early, we're live on TikTok. I just did a thing there. Every time I say the word TikTok, I'm going to do a thing. It'll be like my kind of thing. My TikTok thing. No, right, I won't do that again. It's too late now. You've probably got it on tape, have you? You'll be able to just haunt me with footage of me looking ridiculous. It'll probably be a gif by tea time. But if you have the vaguest interest in looking at my ugly physog as we wade through the mysteries of the day, then you can do so on TikTok. Don't forget to something it and do that thing as well when you do that, liking it by ticking the screen twice or some such. I'll tell you what Mystery Hour is all about in a minute, which is, after all, why we're here. It is the radio equivalent of the Notes and Queries column in The Guardian and other newspapers. And I am telling you that now because people have started thinking that they've ripped me off, whereas, in fact, we ripped them off. So back in the day, I was sitting in the office and my producer at the time said we could do something like this, or I said we could do something like this on the radio. I can't remember who. But it was in the newspaper. The Guardian does the most famous one, but other newspapers do it as well. Readers write in with a question, a mystery, a riddle, and then other readers write in with the answer. The only difference is that we're live, which means the likelihood of getting wrong answers, because we don't really have much of an editing process, is greater, and that turned out to be a wonderful boon. That was a funny thing. That's what informed the Mystery Hour board game, the wrong answers being more entertaining often than the right answers, and the more plausible the wrong answer is, then potentially the more entertaining it becomes. So that is where Mystery Hour came from. And I just want to clarify that because I don't want anyone to think, I don't want anyone who hasn't ripped someone off to be accused of ripping someone off, especially not when I was the one that ripped someone else off, okay? And it's hardly, I mean, rocket science, is it, to do a Q&A thing? Every good idea I've ever had on the radio, it turns out that Nick Abbott and Clive Bull came up with it 20 years ago. But anyway, Nick Abbott or Clive Bull came up with it. And speaking of Nick Abbott, the question
that I wanted to ask you today is how come I've never sneezed on the radio? Is there something about being on the radio that means I don't sneeze? But then, of course, I remembered that Nick Abbott sneezes all the time. It's a regular feature and a very popular feature of his show. But I digress. People ring in with questions, mysteries, riddles, enigma. And other people ring in with, I mean, yeah, we worked it out, you see, yeah. Answers, solutions, explanations. And if your explanation is adjudged to be accurate, and in order to adjudge that, we'll ask what your qualifications are. That can range from, I saw it on the telly last night, right through to, I have a PhD in applied macrobiotics, and as a consequence of that, I am able to provide you with precisely the information. So it can be from the silly to the sublime to the deadly serious. And should your qualifications pass muster, you will receive a Mystery Hour round of applause. If, and this is a very, very, very big if your qualifications are unbelievably appropriate, if, in other words, you are likely to be the or one of the only people who could answer this question from a position of such elevated authority, then you will receive the highest honour that British radio has to offer. A Ray Liotta, which is not confined to Mystery Hour, although it's a while, I think, since we've given one out in a non-Mystery Hour scenario. And that's it. So the number you need, as always, is 0345 6060 973. If you've got a question, you ring that number, you get the question on the board, and you sit back, light a cigar, and wait for somebody else to answer it. That is how it works. And anything goes. In fact, because I had a guest on, because I was talking to James just before 12 noon, then only the real hardcore of Mystery Hour contributors have jumped on the board early. So there are currently, I'm going to say it out loud, there are currently two phone lines free, which is never the case at 8 minutes after 12 on a Thursday, unless I've interviewed a guest in the slot immediately before the 12 noon news. So there it is. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need to ask a question, and also, of course, to answer any questions that you hear being asked by anybody else. My favourite contribution of the day will win one of the aforementioned Mystery Hour board games. Full terms and conditions for that, because it does actually qualify as a proper regulated competition, can be found at lbc.co.uk. I'll do that again in my small print voice. Full terms and conditions can be found at lbc.co.uk. If you want to find out more about the board game, you can go to mysteryhour.co.uk. I'll do that again in my selling board games voice. If you want to find out more about the board game, fun for all the family, go to mysteryhour.co.uk. Shall I crack on now before I make an even bigger fool of myself? And remember, if you are not satisfied merely listening to me making a fool of myself, you can watch it now, live on TikTok. Hey, TikTokers, how's it hanging? Ben's in Bristol. Ben, make it stop. Question or answer?
It's a question, please, James.
Carry on.
My question is, when and why do people from Newcastle start being referred to as Geordies?
I like that question, actually.
Yeah.
We used to have a rule about only one etymology question a week.
Yeah.
I should probably...
Can I get away with it?
No, that's it. You're the first question. You can't go wrong. I just remembered then that I'd forgotten to introduce the rule. Because what happens is sometimes, or what used to happen, people would ask an etymology question and then everybody would ring in with an etymology question because you sort of jogged a lot of memories and people, oh yeah, I wanted to know. So it's our job to look out for that. It's, why Geordie doesn't make any obvious sense, does it?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah. So, that's my question. Yeah.
You're on. Thanks, Ben. Why are Geordies called Geordies? Thank you very much. It is 10 after 12. Dave's in London, Colney. Dave, question or answer?
I'm very sorry. It's going to be another etymology question to a degree. I need my fellow listener wordsmiths to come around with this one. Why do words like mutineer and domineer and engineer and auctioneer and, wait for it, James, Brexiteer, all in WR?
Damn you. Damn your eyes. Carry on.
Sorry.
I hated it when it was applied to Brexiteer because it made them sound like musketeers, or it made them sound like impressive and noble when they were just, as we've subsequently discovered, either as thick as mince or racist or both. But anyway, carry on.
Well, yeah, but that's my question. What's the meaning? Where does this ER come from? What does it mean?
It's got to be French. If it ain't French, it's Latin, and it ain't Latin, so it must be French.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Well, give me a bit of French with ER on the end of it.
Or it might wouldn't it be AIRE in French, and then it gets anglicised into... would it be a, what's a musketeer called in French? What's the original called? Les Trois... Les Trois Musketeers?
Musketeers. I'll find out for you. I like it though. Engineer, musketeer, mutineer. All right, yeah, I like it. I do. I'd be surprised if it's not French, but there's no earthly way you're going to accept that as an answer, Dave. And frankly, who can blame you?
Wait.
No, precisely that. 11 minutes after 12 is the time. Sophia is in Cambridge. Sophia, question or answer?
Hello, James.
Hello,
it's
Sophia.
A question.
Carry on.
It's another wordy one.
Well, this is outrageous. What's the point
of
me?
No, it's not outrageous.
No, not you. I dislike the people who work here don't know what the rules are. It's a rule. It's a full switchboard, and I've got I like word quest. Well, maybe it's a stupid rule, Sophia, actually.
Well, it is, maybe. I was talking to a friend yesterday, and I said, oh, God, the mind boggles. Why does nothing else boggle? I was asking myself. Why is it just that the mind boggles?
Boggles.
Why does nothing else boggle?
That's a lovely question.
I think so. I mean, it's worthy of your board game. But anyway,
it breaks down. It breaks down into why do we say that? Where does that word come from? I think that's why I got impatient with etymology questions, because however you phrase it, they generally all boil down to where does that word come from? So this morning, Geordie's, boggle, and the suffix ear, where do they all come from? But I don't know why I got on my high horse about that, because I'm interested in all three answers.
Yeah, but nothing else in your body boggles.
Or anywhere else in life, nothing boggles. Nothing inanimate boggles. Chairs don't boggle.
No.
Televisions don't boggle. Nothing boggles.
Nothing boggles.
What's a dune boggle?
No idea.
Have you ever heard that word before?
No.
Do you think I possibly just invented it by accident?
I think you'd probably just
No,
did,
there's
Jay.
Definitely... I hope it's not rude. I'm sure I've heard the phrase dune boggle before. I'm sure I've heard the word dune boggle.
Mm. Anyway, that would be lovely if you could find out.
You're very welcome. I'll do my best. Where's Susie Dent when you need her most? Thank you, Sophia. So, Geordie's ears and boggles. It sounds like a sort of Harry Potter-themed menagerie, doesn't it? Hannah is in Wandsworth. Hannah, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
What's the neurological or biological reason why some people can naturally sing in tune and others really, really can't?
I had this conversation with someone yesterday, in fact, who is one of those really annoying people who insists that everyone can actually sing, and those of us who are adamant that we can't just need the right help or the right training.
Hmm.
But even if that were true,
I don't believe them.
Which I don't believe because I've heard myself sing, even if that
Agreed.
Were true, it wouldn't explain why some people are just brilliant and some people are not brilliant, would it?
Yeah, exactly. But I want to know, is it to do with the brain or is it to do with something in your vocal cords?
The ears.
Like, ears, exactly. Which is, where does it come from?
No, it might be the ears because you can't, you know, you can hear, I mean, sometimes I'm singing, I think I am in tune. And then I glance at the children in the pew next to me in church and notice that they're all pointing at me and giggling. And then I realise that I'm not in tune at all. I went to church on Sunday. First time in a while, actually. I don't know why. I just fancied it. And there's something, I don't know whether you know this, something about Catholic churches and singing hymns where the triumph of hope over experience is inspiring in and of itself. But I tried. I sang. They're often in the minor key hymns, which I find easier to sing than things that aren't in the minor key. But my goodness, so we did Amazing Grace, for example. Anything that can be translated into a football anthem is probably easier to sing than other things. But goodness me, the awful caterwauling din that came out of my pie hole was just embarrassing for all concerned. But I like to think that God cared. It is 12:15. Why can some people sing, brackets, well, close brackets, while some people can't? Brackets me, close brackets.
This is LBC.
This is the 810 to Birmingham New Street. Calling at organise to-do list. Call your PA. Shoot off a few emails. Close laptop. Head to the shop. Man behind the counter seems like a good egg. Thinking of eggs, one breakfast butty, please.
Business travel by train is time well spent with Avanti West Coast.
That quiet moment behind the wheel. The perfect space to get your thoughts in order. With the stylish HRV Hybrid, you get the head-turning design you want, with the space and flexibility you actually need. because every journey matters. Book a test drive at Yeomans Honda today. Honda, the power of dreams.
In 2024, a hangry fan posted, "Why do other countries have better McDonald's menus than ours?" So, we went abroad and heisted some worldwide favourites. The World Menu Heist. 9 of the most wanted McDonald's menu items from around the world. Now in the UK. Until 25th of November from 11am, fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears. Give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It's all going wrong. It's all going wrong today. I knew as soon as I said something musical, it's almost as embarrassing for me as saying something mathematical. I'd be wrong. I thought Amazing Grace was in a minor key, but you're telling me it's... I'll tell you what, it's in a minor key when I sing it, even if it's not meant to be. But apparently not. So amazing. No, anyway, I won't do that ever again. And it's not a Doon Boggle, you absolute muppet. I'm talking to myself now. It's a boondoggle. So it's got nothing to do with the word boggle. But there is a word boondoggle. My first band was called the Boon... No, it wasn't. And it is, as you already know, a project that is a great waste of money and time. Usually a public-funded one that was introduced for political reasons. So... HS2, oddly, not a boondoggle, almost the opposite of boondoggle. It was axed for political reasons when it actually would have been a very useful and helpful thing for the country. But hey-ho, on we go. Jamie is in Wellingborough. Jamie, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
So basically, I've been watching a lot of Netflix lately, there's a lot of kind of documentaries around serial killers. It's quite dark.
That's quite all right. That's fine.
So my question is, basically, there's a lot based around 60s, 70s, 80s serial killers and a lot of public information, you know, to try and catch these killers. Now, I'm wondering why there aren't any serial killers around now, because chances are human nature hasn't changed. People will still be killing and keeping trophies of their victims, all that kind of thing. But why, I imagine it's something to do with forensics, something to do with the technological advancement of forensics means that they get caught before they have a spate of killings to their name, if you like.
DNA was the answer I was going to offer up. That would seem the most
you
obvious.
You think there'd be one or two kills before, you know, and maybe...
Well, then they wouldn't qualify. I mean, I don't want to get grisly about this, but then they wouldn't qualify as a serial killer necessarily.
No, of course. But maybe if there was a pattern to them, you'd think that if they were clever in concealing themselves, they would be able to...
Well, would you though? Because, you know, I'm trying to think of the most infamous in this country and what would have happened differently in the event of DNA testing. So Peter Sutcliffe, I suppose, the Yorkshire Ripper, would have been caught sooner if they were swabbing literally everybody who had been spotted in the red light districts of various Yorkshire cities, wouldn't they? Which they would do. Yeah. And the more murders there were, the bigger the police operation would become. So I'm not going to put it, but I'd have thought DNA, to keep it with initials, DNA plus CCTV.
Of course, that would almost certainly help. But I just wonder, because, you know, for me, that you'd think human nature hasn't changed. If someone was very good at concealing their tracks, they would be able to get away with it. I don't know. It was a question.
I don't know who'd be qualified to answer it. Harold Shipman, I suppose, is an example of someone who would get under the wire of what we're discussing. Yeah. You could still have another Shipman now because people didn't realise that he was killing people, but a more, quotes, traditional serial killer. I'd be interested to hear from a detective, actually, on why they think it is. But if it doesn't involve DNA and CCTV at some point, then I'm a banana.
I'm sure that is the answer, but it's kind of a case of just finding out if there's a better answer to it, I suppose.
Yeah, you're on.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
You're right,
though.
It is a bit dark, mate. 21 minutes. Just to be clear, you're not disappointed. You're not disappointed by the reduction in the number of serial killers.
You're not harking back to
the good old days of serial killers.
No, not at all. But it was just because I'm watching these things and thinking, well, they don't really see these anymore. And you're probably right. It probably is a technological thing, but I wanted to...
Pin it down with someone with a little bit more qualification than we have between us. 21 minutes after 12 is the time. There you go. So three questions about words, one about singing, and one about serial killers. James is in Newcastle. James, question or answer?
Hi, James. I've got an answer.
Carry on.
to the Geordie question.
I had a feeling it might be, but I wasn't 100% sure.
So my understanding is there isn't actually a definitive answer in terms of where this is derived from, but there's two main theories.
Go on.
The first being the 1745 Jacobite Rebellion, where it was used as a derogatory term for supporters of King George, and Newcastle were supporters of King George during the war.
Fair enough.
The other one is from the Geordie lamp, which was created as a safety lamp for down the mines by local inventor M. George Stevenson.
Oh, okay. And so it could be one or the other, and history doesn't record, because there wasn't much history recorded, which one of those it was.
Yes.
Or a little bit of both.
Yes,
Stevenson's rocket.
Same family.
It's the same family, but not the same Stevenson.
Yeah, because it was Robbie Louis Stevenson, wasn't it, for the rocket?
That's the bloke that wrote Treasure Island, you flump.
Oh, is that the... Yeah.
So many Stevensons, so little time, James. I probably made a fool of myself now. Just hang on. Robert Louis Stevenson wrote Treasure Island, didn't he, and Kidnapped. He did.
Definitely the same family. I know his son was in, the one that did the train, his son was an inventor as well.
So there were two Stevensons in the inventing family, but they're nothing to do with the bloke that wrote Treasure Island.
Yeah.
He had something to do with lighthouses. I can't remember what. It will come to me.
He built some in the northeast as well. So did he not do the lamp? I think it was.
Who, George Stevenson or Robert Louis Stevenson?
And George Stevenson.
No, I'm thinking about Robert Louis Stevenson now. He has some link to white. If you go to North Berwick, which when the kids were young was one of our favourite destinations for a holiday, you put 20 pence in a lighthouse on the high street and it lights up, and it's got something to do with Robert Louis Stevenson. I may have got mixed up because one of his books is set on the Bass Rock. Anyway, none of this is remotely interesting to anybody, including you. So I will give you a round of applause. Although you could get challenged on this. Someone may claim that they can go definitive, but I like your answer. 12:23 is the time. Ian is in Farnham. Ian, question or answer?
Hello, James.
Hello,
how you doing, mate?
I'm very well.
Yeah.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. I woke up this morning with a bit of a headache.
Oh, dear.
So I went to the drug box and I looked through it for something to take, and everything I found was white. So all the pills, tablets, everything was white, even non-related aches and pains drugs.
Yeah.
And my question is, why is everything white when a lot of stuff is made from natural, from plants and natural, natural sources? So what?
Oh, he's gone. Oh, I hope he has. What's the question going to be? Why are all tablets the same colour?
Why are they?
Oh, there he is. He's back again. How did you do that?
Hello?
Don't
know. I'm bouncing around the garden trying to get a signal.
Oh, they succeeded. So why are they all white?
Why is it all white? Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. But what would you do? You want all different coloured ones?
Well, I would imagine so. So if things are plant-based, or, which most drugs are, a lot are, some are lab-created, but...
I'm just trying to work out whether it's an actual question or not, because they come in packets and boxes, so they don't need to be colour-coded.
No, but the actual tablets are white.
Yes, I know, but they're in a box with a blooming word on the front of it.
Yeah, but why would you make them white instead of keeping the colour that they were, processed at, unless they bleach them or they do something.
It's a slightly more complicated question than I thought. I thought you were saying, why don't they make them all different colours so that you can tell what they are?
No.
All right, sorry.
I'm not telling you.
You probably haven't, but some people will have done. Have you ever heard me mention the geography teacher's catchphrase I had at school? He was a PE teacher who retrained as a geography teacher so he could increase his income. And he couldn't teach you anything that wasn't on the curriculum. And if you asked him a question about something that wasn't literally on the GCSE curriculum, he'd say, "Don't know, nobody knows, don't need to know."
Yep, don't know.
Nobody remember
knows.
Him?
Yep, absolutely.
He told me this.
I think he told me. I swear to you, this has never happened before.
That's not the answer.
I haven't told you what it is yet.
go on.
Kaolin.
What's kaolin?
Kaolin is China clay, and that makes up...
What's kaolin?
That makes up a lot of...
It's the additive,
make it pill size. So the active ingredient in a tablet would be quite small, but in order to make it, you know, big enough to put in a blister pack and to not lose the minute you open it, they pack it with kaolin, China clay. Most tablets will be mostly kaolin, ergo they're the colour of China clay, ergo they're all white.
Perfect.
That is pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Round of applause for me.
Applause for you. Yep.
Thank you very much. I'll almost certainly get challenged.
Thank you, Dave.
No, thank you. It turns out a lot of people didn't know the origins of that catchphrase, so I've now fallen into the habit of using the catchphrase a lot, don't know, don't need to know, nobody knows, without actually explaining the origins of it, which was my geography teacher, who had retrained from being exclusively PE in order to increase his employability, but he'd never bothered to learn anything that wasn't on the GCSE curriculum. So if you asked him, it took us a while to work this out. Because if you asked him a question about something that wasn't absolutely on the curriculum, he would reply by saying, don't know, nobody knows, don't need to know. And we realised after half a term or so that some people did actually know the answers to the questions that we were asking. It just, he was not one of them. So there you have it. And that was something I learned, I remember, in that class. Which doesn't necessarily, on reflection, mean that it's true. But there we are. Morris is in Belfast. Morris, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
When a man ascends to the throne, he gets a queen. When a woman ascends to the throne, she doesn't. Why is that?
She gets a king.
She doesn't get a king.
Of course. She don't, are we 100% sure?
No. That's why I'm ringing.
No. I'm trying to think of a king.
I'm trying to go back. I can't think.
What about William and Mary?
Was it Queen Mary?
I don't know. I thought you would.
No, when I said I didn't know, that's why I'm asking
you. I know, but you might have known that bit, just because you didn't know it all. You might have known that little bit.
Well, I'm trying to know that, then nobody answered my own question.
So the Queen, well, stranger things have happened on the programme, Morris. The Queen is the beneficiary of the succession. It is she that becomes the monarch.
If it's a female. Yeah.
But her husband does not become a king.
No.
All we really need to shoot your question down in flames is an example of a monarch being married to a king.
King and queen.
And then if we can't find one, the question of why, well, probably because a king outranks a queen. So it's a form of misogyny or patriarchy or whatever you prefer. A king outranks a queen, and the consort does not outrank the monarch. So you can't have the consort with a rank that's higher than the monarch. I think that's probably the answer, actually.
But then when do you have a female become a queen?
Because that's junior to a king. That's junior to a king. The king outranks the queen.
But unless it's a female that ranks. A king.
Yeah, but it doesn't, does it, in the sort of guidebooks, as it were?
No, it doesn't work.
A chessboard or whatever you want to go for. The king is senior to the queen. Playing cards, king is senior to the queen. King is always senior to the queen, so you can't have the consort being senior to the monarch. King trumps queen. Yes.
So who's senior if it's a female?
That she is, which is why he's not called a king.
But the queen, then, is senior. So...
Yeah, but if you called him a king, he'd look senior, even though he technically wasn't.
That's not what I'm saying, though.
Well, that's what I'm...
Because it looks that way, that doesn't mean...
That's the reason why they don't call him a king, because he would look like...
But you don't know that?
I do know that. I've just worked it out, using the powers of thought.
No, you're very seldom you have that.
Well, I bet you 50p I've got this one right.
Okay, 50p, you're on.
Yeah, okay. Ace trumps king, king trumps... Queen trumps Jack. That will be the reason. So whose answer will you accept then, Morris, if not mine? By the way, I don't think Ofcom allow me to actually make bets on the radio, so that was just for fun.
Okay, we'll just pretend it wasn't.
Yeah, we'll just pretend that never happened. We'll just rewind live radio and pretend it never happened. Who would you accept then, if you're not going to accept my obviously correct answer?
If somebody comes up with some sort of sensible answer.
That is the correct answer. Just because you find it unsensible doesn't make it...
No, but the very fact that you're going to put it out to your
Well, I wouldn't normally. It's only because you're being so... I wouldn't normally. I'd take a round of applause now, but you're being quite obstreperous.
No, you're being obstreperous.
No, you're being obstreperous. You're being obstreperous.
No, you're being obstreperous.
No, you're being obstreperous.
You see, this is another mystery question. I'm going to ring up one time and ask another question.
Well, I can't. Well, you won't
because
get through.
Because you said it's a mystery yarn. Yeah. It's nowhere near now.
You won't get through with that kind of quibbling and pedantry.
Any wonder? I think I should hang up in great disgust.
Outrageous behaviour. Flipping heck. I'm hanging up on you before you hang up on me. Tim Humphrey has your headlines.
The government has confirmed police and crime commissioners will be scrapped at the end of their current term in 2028. Their responsibilities will be transferred to mayors or council leaders. A review says a 10-year-old girl murdered by her father and stepmother in Surrey was failed by the safeguarding system. A report looking at the handling of Sara Sharif's care by various services says different action could have been taken to help protect her from abuse. UK economic growth slowed to 0.1% in the 3 months to September. Rachel Reeves says there's more to do to build an economy that works for working people. LBC weather, a largely fine afternoon, showers in northern Scotland, mild with a high of 17 degrees.
This is LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
At Laithwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high. And low, and we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at laithwaites.co.uk. Laithwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard your flight to Geneva. This is your captain speaking, and I would like to take a second to welcome our very special guests. All the skis and snowboards that enjoy a free flight to winter wonderland.
The best skiing experiences start with the right airline. Book your winter holiday now on Swiss.com and enjoy free gear transport.
This is LBC Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 12:34. You can watch all of this nonsense live on TikTok. Don't forget to double tap the screen and hit follow. TikTokers, tickety-tockety-doo. Over to you. 0345 6060973 is the number you need if you want to join in. Here are some questions that need answers. We've done the Geordies. Where does ear come from? Ear. Over here. Why do we stick ear? When we stick ear on the end of a word, like thick? No, that's a joke. Musket? Mutin? Brexit. Engine. I think it's probably French, but will someone who knows more than I do please confirm or deny and explain? 0345 6060973. Why is it only our mind that can boggle? Only minds that boggle. Boggles the mind, that question. But where does it come from? That word, boggle, in that context, or indeed any context. How come some people can sing and some people can't, given that our physiognomy is probably identical? Is there any way, if you could sort of X-rayers, well, you can, but could you tell from an X-ray? This is only me now. This isn't the question that Hannah actually asked. Hers is a perfectly splendid question about why some people can sing well and some people just can't. But if you could X-ray and could you tell from some form of physical survey whether or not someone could sing well or not? Or would you have to ask them to sing? Could you look at the vocal cords? Could you look at the shape of the skull or the ears or whatever it may be, some physical characteristic, something that you could see that you could determine without anyone singing whether or not they were likely to be good? That would be interesting, but that's not the question, so I don't know why I said it. Why do there seem to be... Oh, this is really dark, actually, in the revisiting, isn't it? Why does it seem to be the case that there aren't really any serial killers anymore? And I think I took the points for the KLN question, but given the sources, do you say eye-boggling? The eyes boggle? I don't think you do say that. Anyway, given that I took the round of applause, and like my source was the old geography teacher, don't know, don't need to know, nobody knows. It may well be open to challenge, but I think the reason why pills are all white is because they are made up largely of kaolin or China clay. Terry's in Bournemouth. Terry, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Terry.
It's the singing question.
Oh, marvellous.
Well, I'm a professional singer, amongst other things, and I also do a bit of coaching.
Okay.
And what I was taught many, many years ago by my vocal coach, she sang for the Australian National Opera.
Okay.
And it's about the feedback loop between how your brain hears what's coming through your ears and how your brain can interpret that and adjust the vocal cords. You can't really see it. You would have to work with somebody to work out what this feedback loop is achieving. If you can, I mean, I don't want to upset anyone, but if you can imagine people that are not very good with their hearing.
Yeah.
I mean, my cousin's profoundly deaf. And the reason that some of those guys and girls speak with an odd sound is because they can't really hear what's coming back from their voice box, so they do their best interpretation. Now, what she described as a feedback loop. So it's how the brain hears what the voice is producing, and then it's how the brain tells the vocal cords how to move, to moderate or to modulate that correctly.
I kind of almost said that, actually, didn't I? I said it's probably to do with your ears and your brain more than your vocal cords, because it's about what you hear. So would it be the case then, you know how people are often quite shocked when they hear their own voice recordings?
Yeah, absolutely.
So the more shocked you are, the more likely you are to be a bad singer, probably.
The more likely you are to realise that you can make adjustments.
Yes, exactly.
It's critical, the feedback loop. It's not just what you hear coming back. It's your brain's ability to change the vocal cords to modulate those. The three things have to work together.
Ah, I love that. Qualifications? I know you've told us, but tell us again.
Well, professional singer.
Among other things, Terry, among other things.
Yeah.
Do you believe you can teach anyone to sing, or are some people dead losses, lost causes?
I believe, well, I had this conversation with Ian Dale, actually, because he came to see a couple of my shows.
Oh, and, yes.
We haven't quite got to the stage of
teaching. You're trying to teach him to sing?
I did offer, but he hasn't taken me up on
it. Oh, that's a show. I could see Ian in Gilbert and Sullivan, couldn't you? I think he's got that kind of demeanour.
Oh, he'd be fantastic.
He's the very model of a modern Major General.
I could see him as the narrator in the Rocky Horror Show.
Okay, that's a bit more of a stretch, but you know. But each to his own. Is there a little trick for someone who would love to be able to sing better but can't? Is there a single little hack you could give to set him, no, not mentioning any names, brackets me, close brackets, on the path towards being a bit more use in church?
Sorry, I'm just laughing and just thinking of you as a choir boy.
Well, yeah, you weren't laughing at the thought of Ian Dale as playing the flipping Frankenfurter, but you're laughing at me as a choir boy. That's outrageous.
No, the narrator.
Oh, the narrator. Sorry. That would be ridiculous. Yeah, of course. Carry on.
the best advice I could give to anyone is record what you're doing and always use the same thing to sing against. If it's a backing track or if it's somebody accompanying you, just record what you do and see if you can improve how you change your voice.
Oh.
There's loads of vocal exercises. I mean, when I have students, they're absolutely embarrassed by things such as me, ma, me, ma, me, ma, me, ma, me, those sort of things that I have to get.
You've got a lovely voice.
Them to do.
And it works,
yeah, but it wasn't always there. Some people are natural.
And that's why some people block an ear, just to improve improve the feedback loop. You and McColl used to do that, I think. And you exactly just block your ear and it changes what you hear and improves your chances of modulating.
It helps you to focus.
Oh, brilliant
your
question.
Your brain will
answer.
Focus on that and then you can modulate your vocal cords accordingly. Also, if you think of the vocal cords as muscles, which they are, no performance athlete will go out without warming up. So warming up before you go on the vocal cords is really
me.
Ni-na-ya-ya.
Ni-na-ya.
I tell you what, I'm I'm going to do. I'm going to send you Andy and some vocal exercises.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well, I can play Frankenfurter.
If you want to, James. I'll be Eddie, because you probably realise I do that Meatloaf thing, and Meatloaf was Eddie in the rock.
I thought that was you. So Ian's been to see your Meatloaf tribute act, has he?
He's been to see me a couple of times.
Down there, like a bat out of hell. Well played, Terry. Well played. Love it. Round of applause. Oh, hang on. When's the next gig? Give yourself a free advert.
Oh, the next gig I've got is, the next big one I've got is in Newbury, in Berkshire, in the theatre, in the Corn Exchange in January.
There we go. Lovely stuff. Break a leg. Thank you, Terry. 12:41 is the time. I'm now being sent messages I definitely didn't ask for, which is roles that you could imagine Ian Dale playing. Alan probably needs some sort of professional help because he's currently imagining Ian Dale in Cats. Lewis is in Putney. Lewis, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Hang on, I've got some phone lines. Wait there, don't do anything, don't go anywhere. 0345 6060973 is the number you need if you've got a question you want to get on the board, or if you can answer any of the following questions. How did ear end up on the end of so many words, E-R? Why do we talk about the mind boggling? And why don't you see any serial killers anymore? Or at least anywhere near as many. Back to Lewis in Putney. Lewis, question or... Oh, and why is a queen's husband not called a king? If a queen is the monarch, why is her husband not called the king? 03456060097. Poor old Morris will think I was pursuing a vendetta against him there when I just forgot to write his question down. Back to Lewis. What have you got?
Answer, James. Medicines. Why are they mostly white?
I think I got that covered, mate. You're all right.
Okay.
Isn't it kaolin? Isn't it China clay?
Not really, no.
Yes, it is. What are your qualifications, apart from 20 years in the pharmaceutical industry?
Apart from that?
Yeah.
Well, no, just that, really.
Okay, go on then. Tell me your wrong answer.
So, firstly, not all medicines are white. There are quite a few that are different colours. There's a certain blue pill that most people will be aware of.
Is that... Yeah, Keith's got a few of those. What's it for?
blood flow, shall we say. Vasodilator, I think, the technical
term. Oh, okay, interesting. Yeah. But that's a dye, is it, rather than the actual contents of the chemical?
Yeah, that'll be an additive.
Because partly because you don't want anyone to take it by accident.
Precisely. Mm. So, and that's another reason why some are colour-coded. But
yes,
the majority that he's talking about, of the standard ones, shall we say.
Yes.
This partially it's historical, but the main reason is because the active pharmaceutical ingredient usually comes from crystallised powders, and that loses the colour in the manufacturing process.
Yes.
And then we bind those pills, shall we say, all together with other things like binding ingredients.
Kaolin.
And sugar.
Kaolin.
Some of that, sometimes, it depends on the drug.
Or kaolinite. Kaolinite, maybe it's known as these days. It's, I think the correct word is, I'm remembering all of this from 1987, excipient.
Yes.
Inactive.
That's correct.
Excipient.
And other ones have, like, sugar coatings, and because it delays your stomach digesting it, so it gets absorbed into your small intestine. But historically also, white is a very clean colour.
Yes.
And you can very easily pick up the human eye impurities and defects and things like that. And now computers and cameras can do it much better.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. So it's like the backdrop against which you could see things that were problematic.
Exactly. You very quickly see little black bits in flour, if you've got the flour out. So back in the old days, as it were, the apothecaries and whatnot, they would be able to see any imperfections really easily if they had impurity. Well, granted, those guys probably just snake oil. So anyway.
Oh, I love it. Sorry, I'm not taking away my own round of applause, but I'm going to give you another one because it's an embellishment rather than a challenge.
Can I add one thing, though?
Anything you want. Well, within reason.
I've been going through a bit of a tough time recently.
Hey, Lewis, I'm sorry to hear that.
That's all right. I was listening to this guy on the radio, and his own journey with therapy helped me get on mine. And I just wanted to say thank you.
Well, that's an amazing thing to say, and it's really wonderful for me to hear that, and I'm so glad it's working, because you're a good guy and you deserve it, okay?
Thank you.
Stay safe, right?
And
better late than never, Lewis. Don't fall into the trap that I fell into very, very briefly until someone pulled me out of it, which was wishing that I'd done this sooner, because better late than never, always better late than never.
Exactly.
All right, I've got to give you a round of applause now after tugging on those heartstrings.
Yeah.
Well played, Lewis. Stay safe, my friend. Seriously. It is 12:46. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Good news for Northern Wales on nuclear power and AI, but are the jobs of the future doing enough to help the jobless of now? And when was the last time you chatted to a stranger?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
At Lathwaite, we go to great lengths to bring you great wine. We go far and wide. Searching high, and we mean really high, and low. And we mean stored deep underground in a cave low. Off the shelf? We don't go there. Off the beaten track? We certainly go there. And the best bit is, we even come to you. Order now at Lathwaites.co.uk. Lathwaites. We stop at nothing to bring you great wine.
Hello, I'm a National Lottery scratch card. You normally see me in the shops, but you know where I'd really like to be? Round yours at Christmas. I'm a great Christmas guest. You can use me as a festive place setting for a bit of fun. And you might even win a few quid. At the very least, I'll distract Uncle Dave from saying something inappropriate.
Oh. Buy a National Lottery scratch card and add some play to Christmas. Gift responsibly. Rules and procedures apply. Players and gifters must be 18 or over.
In 2024, a hangry fan posted, why do other countries have better McDonald's menus than ours? So, we went abroad and heisted some worldwide favourites. The World Menu Heist. 8 of the most wanted McDonald's menu items from around the world. Now in the UK. Until 25th of November from 11 a.m. Please apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
I was thinking about Terry in Bournemouth, not the stuff about the Rocky Horror Show, but that thing about the feedback loop and why some people can sing and some people can't sing. Natasha Devon's listening, and her old teacher told her that if you're good at accents, if you're good at mimicking accents, you'd be good at singing. It would make sense, wouldn't it? I'm quite good at accents, but I can't sing. I am quite good at accents. You just pretend I'm not to tease me when I do a really brilliant Welsh accent and you ask me who the Scottish person is that I'm impersonating, or I do my fantastic Australian. See if you can. It's one of the hardest accents to do. See if you can, but I'm very good at it. That may have been the Australian one that came out by accident. I'll tell you what's really easy to do is a Welsh accent. If you can't do a Welsh accent, then you're wasting everybody's time, you are. So I'm quite good at accents, but I'm not very good at singing. I bet you, and this is entirely at random. And I've interviewed a few lately. Alistair McGowan's very musical. I mean, he's actually a concert level pianist. He's a brilliant pianist. But I bet he can sing as well. And he's a brilliant impressionist. Coleshaw was in recently. I wish I'd never invited John Coleshaw onto the programme, because as soon as he'd got out of the building, he started taking the mickey out of me on Dead Ringers on Radio 4. So I bet the impressionists are good singers. I bet, because if you can do that, if you can hear a voice. Do you want to know what I have to put up with at work? So I said to the team during the break, I said, I bet you that impressionists are good singers. And Eleanor shook her head at me in quite a characteristically condescending fashion, as if I'm stupid. And she's just written on the screen now, oh, I thought you meant impressionists like Monet. Why on earth would be good at painting mean that you were good at singing? That's outrageous. You say, I can't believe I have to put up with this kind of service, in quotes, on a daily basis. But if you can hear someone speak and then ape their voice perfectly, like John Coleshaw does to me on Dead Ringers, the rascal, then you can probably sing. I bet you that there is evidence that people who are very good at impressions are very good at singing. Back to the show. Hugo's in Wimbledon. Hugo, question or answer?
Question, James.
Carry on, Hugo.
Okay, so I was watching David Attenborough the other night, one of the deep ocean things. Now, at the very bottom of the ocean, deep, deep down, a mile down, is the water there thicker more viscous than the water at the surface, because obviously you have all the pressure of the rest of the sea on top. Just so you know, if you take a Coke can down, you know, in a submarine, it will crush.
Yeah.
The same happen with water.
Well, it won't in a submarine, will it?
What? No. If it was outside the submarine.
Yeah, if it was outside the submarine. Because if it was in a submarine, yeah. all the submariners would have their heads would be exploding. It'd be a right old mess.
Accepted, yes. But you see what I mean? I mean, it's water, because I know water's different to a lot of other sort of chemical makeups, but...
It can't be, can it? I mean, just against... That's a lovely... I wish I'd got it on a bit sooner. I should have stopped waffling about accents. And I certainly could have done without the singing. I think we can all agree about that, especially everyone watching on TikTok. Thank you very much. So given that pressure is exerted on whatever is in the water when you get down to certain depths, is pressure exerted on the water itself in a way that would make the water take up, it would reduce in volume? It would become thicker, as it were.
It would become more viscous. Like, I would have thought, like, I don't...
I like the question. On a scale of 1 to 10, what kind of marks did you get in physics at school?
I got a C.
Okay, it's more than I got. I got an E.
But GCSE?
Yeah, same. But neither of us are very good at this stuff, so it could be that this is a really stupid question, is what I'm very politely dancing around, Hugo.
Yeah, you could have been politer, but yeah.
Is it inconceivable, for example, that water is incompressible? See, I'm good with words, I'm just rubbish at physics.
You are.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
All right, you're on. Does water, is it subject to its own pressure, as it were? And apologies if Hugo's question is very stupid, which is possible. Rob Brydon and Steve Coogan, both brilliant singers, apparently. Mike Yarwood used to often end his show with a song. You see, my theory's looking good. It's looking good. And Karen's been in touch to say, I love how you think you're good at accents. Thanks, Karen. I love how you love how you think I... What? What are you... Hey? Oh, Matt's in Farnham. Matt, that's a lot of calls from Farnham today. What's going on in Farnham, Matt? Is it raining?
Just big fans, I think.
Oh, well, there we go. Fans in Farnham. Question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
I think I've got an answer for the where does ear come from.
That nice one.
So, the suffix E-E-R comes from the French, Middle French, I-E-R, which comes from the Latin arius suffix, A-R-I-U-S, which comes from the verb of doing something, so it would the suffix that you connect to the noun to make it the noun for the person
to do.
Doing
so it comes off the end of fair, as it were, F-A-I-R-E.
Yeah, exactly.
So someone doing something. Can we think of an example? Would it be mousquetaire?
Yeah,
probably was mousquetaire.
Like if you're a commandeer, what you've done is command something, so you get
to do it. Engines, you work with engines. You're an engineer. You're doing a mutiny. You're a mutineer. You work with muskets. You're a musketeer.
Exactly.
You're as thick as mince, or racist, or both. You're a Brexiteer.
There we go.
All of those. They all work, don't they?
Works for all of them.
Yeah?
I think Brexit breaks the rule, though, because I think the rest...
Well, it broke a lot of rules, mate. I mean, it became something that allowed people who didn't know what they were talking about to drown out the noise of people who did. But, hey, you've got to get over it. Well, you don't want to suffer from Brexit derangement syndrome, mate. Qualifications?
I had to sit through 2 years of French and Latin at college.
Yeah, well, so did I, to be fair. But I knocked at the door of this answer, but I prefer your version because it was the A-I-R-E that nailed it. Have a round of applause, Matt.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Joe's in Hadley. Joe, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
My understanding is that a boggle is a northern spirit. A spirit from the north of England. They kind of live in houses and they confuse people and make them all kind of boggle their mind.
Really?
I mean, I think it was used in a kind of in a version of it in Harry Potter with the boggarts in the cupboard back in the day. So yeah, there you go.
Well, I mean, you can't just say, yeah, there you go. I mean, what are your qualifications?
Well, OK, my qualifications are rather spurious.
Mate. Yeah, go on.
The first thing is I rather like fairy tales. I think they're great. You know, all those kind of weird and wonderful things are fabulous. I also used to play Dungeons and Dragons, which is another kind of thing where you find these things out.
Fair enough.
Also, I happen to be a priest as well, so you kind of pick up these things.
A priest who likes fairy tales?
Oh, indeed.
I'm saying nothing.
No, exactly, exactly. We know the best one, don't we? I've been told to say that we're driving off on holiday. My wife sits in the car next to me, talking to you as you're talking. It's quite annoying, really. And she thinks you're fabulous. There you go.
Well, that's very nice. I think she's fabulous as well. In fact, you're a bit of a spare part in this conversation.
I am really.
This is
laughing.
Qualifications?
Well, my only qualification is an interest.
Do we know for sure that a boggle is a northern spirit, a naughty spirit?
Well,
and then Charles Fursington into boggles the mind, so he's played tricks on the mind. He's
exactly. It boggles, it causes mayhem. It's a bit like a kind of goblin-y kind of thing.
I'm going to give you a round of applause. I don't think it is just minds that boggled. I think it can almost be a synonym for goggle, can't it? So you boggle at the sight.
I also think that people tend to like to be very personal about things, so in a mess, they say, I'm being boggled rather than
boggled.
Whatever.
Round of applause for Joe. And what's your lovely wife called, Joe?
Mary Lou.
And another round of applause for Mary Lou and her impeccable taste in radio presenters. Anyway, and happy holidays, guys. Enjoy yourselves. Where are you off to?
We're off to via Shrewsbury to some Mary Lou's friends in Wales.
Oh, delightful. Well, mind how you go.
She also sends you her love, she says. It was very disturbing.
Well, that's lovely. Look at that. There we go. What a lovely show. A lot of love coming in today, and we do appreciate it. This has to be, writes James, one of the best mystery hours I've ever heard, matched only by the one with the slow snail going up the mountain. And Jenny writes, this is one of the best hours of my week. I can put all my worries aside and just have a proper laugh. It brings out the best in everyone, too, and I'm sure I'm not alone. You add Lewis's beautiful comments to that, and it's been a show of particular poignancy, hasn't it? And warmth. David is in Putney. Last one, probably. Question or answer?
Answer to your viscosity question about water.
Yes.
So liquids are a type of fluid that is incompressible. So we know
inconceivable.
Inconceivable. So we know that we can compress gases.
Yes.
But liquids are largely incompressible. The amount you can
inconceivable.
Inconceivable. And the answer is no. Viscosity won't change because viscosity is a measure of the cohesiveness of atoms. Perfect. So whether they stick together, and pressure does not change that property.
Qualifications?
A star to A level in physics.
Oh, all right. A big dog's arrived. Round of applause for the big dog.
Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. And for people who haven't seen the film The Princess Bride, I'm not going mad. Inconceivable is a phrase. Can we squeeze in John very quickly? Sheila doesn't mind. What have you got, John, in Dromfield? Or Dom in Johnfield?
It's to do with kings and queens. You
boots.
Actually more or less answered it yourself, James. Yeah,
it's often the way, John. I do apologise.
It was the exception that proves the rule.
Yes.
Is William and Mary. Because normally you get Parliament and the nobles don't want a foreign prince to come in and marry the queen and take over.
Like King of Spain, in a way.
Yeah, various ones. But with the case of William and Mary, he basically said, if you don't make me king, I'm back to the Netherlands and taking my army with me.
And they needed the army.
They need it because, of course, James II would have come back.
Indeed he would.
And taken the throne.
So they made him a king, an equal king, as it were.
That was it, and of course, Mary died first. William did actually have a claim to the throne himself, but it wasn't as good as his wife.
Oh, beautiful stuff. Qualifications?
Oh, years ago, I studied history, 50-odd years ago.
Oh, that's a great memory you got there. Well played. Have a round of applause. Sheila Fogarty is shaking her head.
Typical man. Couldn't let his wife have her moment.
Which one? The one?
Well, William and Mary.
I thought you meant that lovely bloke on his way to Wales. No, you're right. You couldn't. I've got to be king, otherwise I'm going home and
she can't have it on her own.
I'm taking my ball with me.
This is like Lily Allen.
It is, isn't it? Someone should make an album. Thank you.
Exactly.
I feel I should give a game to someone. I've got to give it to Terry in Bournemouth, haven't I? Me. Can you check? Just check Lewis has got one. If Lewis hasn't got one already, send it to Lewis. And if he has got one already, we'll give it to Terry. That's it from me. I am a little bit late, so I will spare you the usual.
Sorry.
No, it's my fault.
Briefly.
Would we
benefit from the me?
Apparently so.
As broadcasters.
Can you sing?
Ish.
Yeah, maybe we would. A little bit of vocal training. Someone told me yesterday the newsreaders have vocal coaches.
La, 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 la.
That was my reaction as well. Do download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Tom Swarbrick will be with you at 4 on LBC, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. At three today, I want to talk about our connectedness or lack of it. Neighbours of Sara Sharif, the little girl murdered by her parents, feared being called racist if they intervened. Big Issue has done some research and found us very disconnected indeed. When was the last time you spoke to a stranger? At two, more batches of Epstein emails. Trump's name comes up a lot, as you would imagine. His taste for young women, surprising nobody. But is there a smoking gun? What else do they reveal? A lawyer for Epstein's victims joins me in a short while. Straight up after the news, though, I'm going to be joined by Government Tech Minister Liz Kendall. She'll join me shortly. Nuclear and AI jobs for North Wales, but will AI destroy more jobs than it creates? Just don't know, do we?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The role of Police and Crime Commissioner is to be abolished. The position will go at the end of the current electoral term in 2028, with the responsibilities being transferred to mayors or council leaders. Tory Shadow Home Secretary Chris Philp has told MPs the move will remove accountability.
This government, essentially, in their announcement today, is tinkering around the edges. They are rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, while crimes like shoplifting rocket, while police numbers fall, and while the police face a funding crisis made in the Home Office.
With the budget nearing, figures show UK economic growth is slowing down. The Office for National Statistics say it grew by just 0.1% in the 3 months to September. A review has found Sara Sharif's murder was preventable and authorities missed opportunities to protect her. The 10-year-old was killed by her father and stepmother at a home in Woking in Surrey in 2023. Safeguarding consultant and social worker Joanna Nicholas says this should lead to fundamental change.
Today, the most important thing is the horrific life and death that Sara suffered. But until we have a government that recognises we need to do more, we're going to carry on coming up with the same findings again and again and again.
The waiting list for routine hospital treatment in England has fallen slightly, having previously risen 3 months in a row. The NHS estimates 6.24 million people were waiting for treatment at the end of September, compared to 6.25 million in August. Ed Miliband says he won't apologise for picking a British company to build the UK's first small modular nuclear reactor. Rolls-Royce has been chosen for the project in North Wales, which will be run by the publicly owned Great British Energy Nuclear. Sir Keir Starmer has been to Anglesey to speak to those who will work on the project.
This is going to be next generation nuclear, so it's really exciting, the first of its type here in North Wales, and we're going to sign the contract this year and the work is going to start next year.
An amber weather warning has been issued for the Midlands tomorrow. The Met Office says Storm Claudia could bring a month's rain in 24 hours. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 66 points at 98.45. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.13. And the LBC weather, a largely fine afternoon. Showers in northern Scotland, mild with a high of 17 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Humphrey.
This Christmas at Tesco, get Nescafe Azura for just £3.45, down from £7.25 with your Tesco Club card. That's what makes it Christmas. Tesco, every little helps. Majority of larger stores, Azura 90 grams, end 2nd of December. Club card or app required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. Now, where there is good news, we should report good news as well. And there seems to be good news for North Wales today. That's certainly what the First Minister of Wales thinks. It's certainly what my guest Liz Kendall, who we'll speak to in just a moment, Secretary of State for Science, Innovation and Tech, thinks. She's the Labour MP for Leicester West as well. I'll tell you what's happened for North Wales. You heard a little of it in the news there from Tim. North Wales is in line for more than 3,400 new jobs through newly announced AI growth zone, or an AI growth zone. As the Prime Minister and Liz Kendall, the Tech Secretary, set out those plans to ensure sites deliver for working people, their favourite term, working people. They say it's uniquely positioned with the potential to leverage the UK's first small modular reactor in Wolfa, bringing together the technologies of the future in North Wales. So it's all positive and forward-looking. Reforms in planning and energy access to accelerate the development, to unlock up to £100 billion of additional investment, they say, creating thousands of jobs across the country. So not just those 3,400 jobs. We'll get Liz Kendall in a second to explain how it can fan out to the rest of the country, that advantage. But all of this comes on the same day that some more troubling figures for the Chancellor arrive. Growth in the UK economy slowed to 0.1% in the July to September period. Looks to be caused in the main by a drop in car production. The figure was below the predicted figure of 0.2% by analysts, those forecasts. It is a blow to Rachel Reeves, who has repeatedly said that growth is her top priority. And there's a big debate. We have it here on the programme, big debate ongoing as to whether they have chosen, the government since they came into power, whether they have chosen policies, enacted policies that really do encourage growth. Some employers, a good number of employers, have said they have not made the right choices on that front. They would cite things like an increase in the minimum wage, a big increase in the minimum wage for the youngest workers. They would cite perhaps the national, well, not perhaps, there's no perhaps about it. They would cite the national insurance rise for employers. We might see one for workers in the budget. We don't know. We might see income tax rises in the budget. We don't know. But what we do know, and you heard it again on LBC this morning on Nick's programme, people calling in saying that they'd had to close down their restaurant that they'd been running for years, you know, just a small family business that they just hadn't been able to keep open because of costs. We had a call from a gentleman in Huddersfield, I think it was yesterday, who was telling us how difficult is he's in steel production and was saying how difficult it is in that global market because of NI, because of costs, because of energy costs in particular. So I guess the government might argue that this nuclear development in Anglesey or on Anglesey in North Wales is a nod to doing something about that. But there's a reason internationally other companies can really compete. In the States, their energy costs are a third of ours. In countries that have invested in nuclear or are way ahead of us in clean energy, their costs are lower than our costs. And one of the things that I think his name was Chris, if I've got it right, I'll call it yesterday. One of the things he alluded to was energy costs, saying just how prohibitive it was for his company. So I don't shy away from the fact that this is good news for North Wales. It without a doubt is good news for North Wales. But we're going to need more North Waleses, aren't we? We're going to need more North Waleses. I wonder as well on AI growth zones, this promise that they will regenerate local communities and deliver new opportunities across the country. Has AI already impacted your life?